Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Wednesday night edition of BAMS Radio. I am your producer slash host slash I wear an extraordinarily large number of hats at this little production, Thomas the Rock Watts, and I am joined by the one, the only, the legend. Legend, how you doing tonight?
Doing good, Thomas. Doing good, man. Just getting in and getting settled. Looking forward to a great night of talking about Alabama sports and particularly Alabama football tonight, my friend.
Well, I'm with you on that. I'm sure we have a bunch to talk about with the A-Day game. Stephen Smith from Touchdown Alabama will be joining us in a minute. But before I bring him on, I just kind of want to get your thoughts on the A-Day game. What was your big takeaway?
Well, it seems like everybody was disappointed, but I tell you what, I woke up Sunday morning and looked in my Easter basket and found 2 5-star eggs and 2 4-star eggs. So it was pretty exciting to me. I mean, I was a little bit more focused on recruiting than I was the game. The game kind of didn't live up to what a lot of people thought offensively, especially with Lane Kiffin now in town. But, I mean, the defense looked really well, and I think anybody that knows football and sees the stars that we have on offense knows that we're going to be in really good shape. I do think Blake Sims took a step back. I heard K-Dub say on the Feinbaum show this week that before the game he made a statement that Blake Sims couldn't win the job on A-Day, but he certainly could lose the job on A-Day, and it appears that he took a major step back in that game, in my opinion.
Well, I honestly did share that opinion with you, but I kept thinking about it, and while it wasn't a very good game, for him in particular, I'm not going to crucify him over it. The offense was very limited, which limits play calling and limits a quarterback's ability to audible out of plays, audible out of bad looks. So I'm going to – I hear what you're saying, but I'm kind of withhold judgment if this sort of thing continues to fall, assuming Jacob Booker doesn't get pulled by a storm. I definitely think you're right, but I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach for now just because we know Blake Sims is a mobile quarterback, and they didn't really let him be mobile except for the occasional bootleg. So I just, again, I'm going to take a wait and see, and maybe there's something that they're keeping hidden for now. But it was a very disappointing game, at least for me, for the offense, excuse me.
Yeah, and I'm just not high on Blake Sims, and other people may have a different opinion, and you're welcome to call in tonight and give your opinion at 714-510-3707. Love to hear you tonight on BAMS Radio. But I wasn't high on Sims last year. I'm not high on him this year. I think they're bringing Jacob Coker in for this particular job. I think it's his. And I just don't see that. If Blake Sims starts the season and he's our quarterback, I think we're in real trouble as far as another national title. I really do. And that's not necessarily just my appraisal after the A-Day game. That's my overall appraisal of him after watching him now for a couple of years. I mean, I'm not real high on taking running backs and trying to make them quarterbacks and that kind of thing. And I just don't think he's cut out to be the quarterback at the University of Alabama. I really don't. That's just my opinion. Take it for what it's worth, but that's just my opinion. I'd be majorly disappointed if Jacob Coker don't come in and take the reins from the University of Alabama. 6'5", 230 quarterback with a pro arm. I mean, that's what we need. We need somebody that can extend the field. We have the runners. We have the receivers. We're only lacking that one ingredient. And I was kind of amazed after the A-Day game. It seems like the national perspective now is that Auburn is the clear-cut favorite in the SEC West. Greg McElroy made this statement this week. Andre Ware made this statement this week. Several others made this statement this week. I ain't going to go that far. I still think Alabama is the team to beat in the SEC West, despite a very poor A-Day game, in my opinion.
Well, I think that I kind of feel like the Auburn hype train has gotten rolling in response to Auburn's offense putting up 58 or 65 points on its defense. Auburn's going to have a good offense. I have never said that they won't have a good offense. I think that they'll be able to move the ball. But it takes two to tango, and Nick Saban, I believe he said it best himself. When one side, offense or defense, does something good, they look good. But at the same time, the side they did it against, the counterpart, the offense or the defense, looks bad. So I kind of see it as, do you look at it as a glass half empty or a glass half full? Auburn's got a good offense, but they just torched their own defense. So you know, it just comes down to perspective for me. I think the Auburn-Alabama game, the Iron Bowl, is going to be a very good game this year, and I'm looking forward to it. And speaking of Jacob Coker, and this is just a fun fact that kind of blew me away, when he's in Mobile, he works out like three blocks from my house. If I can troll the internet enough to figure out what days he works out on, I might try and sneak up to Spring Hill College and watch a workout for myself, assuming what's-his-name, the QB guru, won't, you know, shoot me. But anyway,
yeah, don't get arrested.
Well, my mom has a PhD from Spring Hill. They're not going to kick me off campus. But anyway.
Yeah, but what were some of your views of the A-Day game, Rock?
Well, like I said with Blake Sims, I don't think that you can completely judge him off that one game. Cooper Bateman showed flashes. A couple of his passes were beautiful. A couple of them left me scratching my head. David Cornwall's one pass was confusing and into the dirt, but again, he's a true freshman. That's okay. I was very encouraged by not only the first team defense putting a pretty good whooping on the Alabama O-line, but the second team defense putting a good whooping on them too. One of the things that you can go back and forth on from last year is that Alabama did not have a shutdown corner. They didn't have a T. Milner or a Dre Kirkpatrick or a whoever. Well, does Alabama have that this year? Maybe when Eddie Jackson gets healthy, maybe if Tony Brown develops. But now Alabama has a pass rush that will kind of cover, I guess cover is the word I'm looking for, cover for a potentially developing young secondary. And that's a really powerful position to be in. Now, does that play out coming through the fall and against West Virginia? I'm going to wait and see again. But if you told me right now that the boys in the trenches have to go play against West Virginia, I'll be like, good luck, Mountaineers. You're about to get bum-rushed. That's really, those are my real big takeaways, the D-line and how well they performed.
What was your impression of Pedway?
Well, let me put it to you this way. Anytime one of the biggest men on the field can make an interception and then run it back, that's great for him. That's a huge problem for the offense. But it was him, actually, you know, breaking in Pedway. I believe he ran down T.J. Yeldon from the opposite end of the field on his one really long run. That's a very big man to be running that fast. That's very encouraging, if you ask me.
Who are some of the other people that stood out on the D-line, in your opinion?
Well, not a D-lineman, but Reggie Ragland. Look, I guess my attitude with him is, where the hell did he come from? Obviously, good player. Highly recruited, highly voted coming out of high school. But he's always kind of been in the wings. And then at A-Day, he had this huge coming out party. And then I'm getting to that king of Twitter. He said this in chat. Jonathan Allen. Jonathan Allen's a hoss. And that boy is going to do some work for the Alabama Crimson Tide come fall. Those two were really, really impressive.
Yeah, I think we're in great shape. I was more concerned about the defense going into A-Day than I am the offense. I think we can't really make an assessment of the Alabama offense until Coker is in the picture. I think it's still a work in progress as far as Lane Kiffin taking over and implementing his offense and so forth. But, I mean, I'll take the Alabama offense every day of the week going into a college football season. I mean, you still have to look at the fact you got Amari Cooper, Christian Jones, DeAndre White will be back, which will strengthen that wide receiver core. And, of course, Chris Black had a big play in that game, too, and everybody's been waiting for him to explode on the scene. And, of course, you got O.J. Howard, and you just got running backs galore. How did the offensive line perform? I heard some criticism concerning them in your opinion.
Well, I think it goes back to your glass-half-full, glass-half-empty thing I mentioned with Auburn. The Alabama defensive line put a real hurtin' on the Alabama offensive line on Saturday. I think that Cam Robinson, he looked good, but then he made some boneheaded mistakes. But again, that's a true freshman. That's to be expected. I think Mario Cristobal still has his work cut out for him. I think he will be one of the hardest-working men in Tuscaloosa throughout the next 6 months until kickoff. So I think it's a work in progress. I think they showed some flashes of being excellent. I certainly think that having Derrick Henry, who, if you give him a crease, can turn it into a gigantic hole by just being a big guy and running through arm tackles, is a really big help to the O-line. But, and that's the other thing I just thought of, excuse me. I want to talk about Lane Kiffin's offense in context of the offensive line. What you saw on Saturday was a lot of boot action, a lot of fullbacks leaking out of the backfield. Even if the offensive line is bad and they're getting a consistent pass rush, a bootleg or a little fullback leak like that are two very legitimate ways to slow down a pass rush. So even if the O-line doesn't develop to what I guess you could call the Alabama standard, I think it's one of those things where it's able to be hidden by solid play calling and good game planning. But I think the O-line will look better moving closer to the season.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's talent there. I heard somebody say today on Jocks, they were talking about it was the game in Tuscaloosa, 99.1, that comes on after Feinbaum, and it is an excellent show every day at 5 o'clock. I heard somebody say that Chance Warmack, DJ Fluker, Barrett Jones, they may have kind of spoiled the Alabama fan base as far as an offensive line. We had that line that had five pros on it at one time, and now the offensive line is probably the weakness of the offense overall. But I still think there's tremendous talent there, and it'll be a work in progress. But definitely an area of concern is the line, and also, as you mentioned earlier, the cornerback position. I still think the defense overall is in excellent shape at the University of Alabama. I heard a man say one time, the nucleus of a great defense is you have to have a great player at every level of your defense, meaning you have to have a great defensive lineman, you have to have a great linebacker, and you have to have a great player in the secondary. And I think Alabama has that with Robinson in the middle and Trey DePriest at linebacker and Landon Collins. And then you just surround them great players with excellent players. So I'm not really worried about the defense or the cornerback position, but I am a little concerned about the offensive line. I'm not really concerned about quarterback. I'm that high on Jacob Coker. I'm going to make a statement now that might shock a few people. I'd rather be going into this season with Jacob Coker than I would A.J. McCarron. I just think Coker is going to bring something that the Alabama fan base has not really got a chance to see, and that is a quarterback capable of throwing 35 to 40 touchdown passes in a season. Yeah, he was a backup at Florida State, but excuse me, he was a backup to the Heisman Trophy winner. So, and that competition was still in debate well up until almost to the start of the season. So I'm really high on Jacob Coker. I'm really high on this football team. I think there's a rededication to excellence. There's a rededication to the Saban way. And I really think we have an outstanding shot at number 16 this year at the University of Alabama.
Well, you could be right. Legend, it's about 7:15, and Stephen Smith has been on hold for a couple minutes. Let's go on. I'm going to make him live. Let's get his impressions of the 8A game. Stephen, can you hear me, my friend?
I can hear you loud and clear, Thomas. What's going on?
Not much, buddy. I know you've been listening to the past couple of minutes of conversation, and I just want to get your opinion of the 8A game. What did you see that I might have missed or Legend might have missed?
Well, Thomas and Legend, I had the joy and the opportunity of covering the 8A game Saturday for a Touchdown Alabama magazine. And one of the things that impressed me, starting off offensively, Cooper Bateman, though, he went 11 for 24 passing for 156 yards and one touchdown. Out of those 11 completions, a good bit of those, I saw him thread the needle. He looked good threading the needle. He looked good putting touch on the passes. A lot of his ball placement was intact. Two of his passes in particular, the one to Robert Foster that went 34 yards going towards the right sideline, he put that ball on a line. It was right there on Foster's outside shoulder. He was able to go up and high point the ball, make the reception, and kept both being bound. His second pass towards the left sideline, that was 32 yards to Ardarius Stewart. Stewart able to go up and make the catch for the touchdown. So Cooper Bateman, he showed some arm strength. He showed some accuracy on a good bit of those passes. He was even able to showcase some mobility of being able to break the pocket, pick up some yards with his feet. When you look at Blake Sims, I think it was the fact that he, instead of letting the game come to him and taking his time, he tried to play up to the game speed, and it bothered him. I felt like he was nervous coming in because this being the first live practice. You're talking about you're going from being in a controlled environment where you have teammates and coaching staff watching you to being watched by roughly 73,000 fans. Now, I'm making no excuse for an apron for him in this sense, but it's the fact that not everybody can be a Michael Vick. Not everybody can be a Cameron Newton. You got to be able to play your style of football and stay in your own lane. Blake Sims was not able to play up to the game speed and tried to force himself to do so, and he was not in rhythm the entire time. One of the main stars on defense that I was impressed with, Jonathan Allen. That is a grown man. Jonathan Allen, number 93 in that crimson and white, provided a pass rush out of this world demands a double team. Got to Alec Morris multiple occasions. I know he and teammate Ryan Anderson combined for 5 sacks in that game, so that impressed me. Going back to what you mentioned about Reggie Ragland, Ragland covered a bunch of ground in the 8-day game. You talk about 10 tackles and an interception, brought down big Derrick Henry. Not many people can bring down Derrick Henry, but Reggie Ragland certainly brought that man to the ground. You look at Trey Dupree had 7 tackles. Dylan Lee fresh off the DUI there. He had 9 tackles in the ball game. You look at Tony Brown in a non-contact jersey, put in 5 tackles and an interception. That was a pleasant surprise for the Alabama Crimson Tide fan base. But I was very proud of 2 wide receivers being Robert Foster and Ardarius Stewart. I know the veterans on this team, being Amari Cooper, Christian Jones, especially the Andrew White when he returns next season. But you look at 2 stars to look forward to in that future. Robert Foster and Ardarius Stewart both had tremendous ball games. Robert Foster, 4 catches for 50 yards. Ardarius Stewart put in 2 receptions for 59 yards and 1 touchdown. But the defense of Alabama really played well. The offense, as far as I heard Coach Saban and Lane Kiffin mention that only 10% of that offense was used. But as you guys mentioned earlier, when Cooper, Jacob Coker lands in Crimson Soil this fall, especially when he comes in the month of May, we'll really get a chance to see that offense really come in line more. When you look at the offensive line, I look at 3 players. I look at Ari Quanjo, Austin Shepherd, and Ryan Kelly. Those 3 have to buy in. If those 3 buy in, the rest will fall in line. You look at the offensive lines that Alabama's had in the past, in particular, guys like Barry Jones, DJ Fluker, and Chance Womack. When those 3 guys bought in, that's what made that Alabama offensive line the bully and the molar and the dominance that it became, that it was. And it's going to take Ari Quanjo, Austin Shepherd, and Ryan Kelly, the 3 returning starters, to buy into the process of what's going on. And if those 3 are able to buy in, an offensive line is going to be able to become a success because those 3 are going to be listed as the veteran leaders of their line. As Thomas mentioned, I saw some good things from Cameron Robinson. But like we know, he's a freshman. He's going to make his mistakes, and his maturity and learning is going to come in time. When you talk about the men in the trenches, what does that bond start with? What does the leadership start with? It starts with the Austin Shepherd, Ryan Kelly, and, of course, Ari Quanjo.
I like it. Hey, Stephen, great to have you on tonight, my friend. You mentioned Robert Foster and Ardarius Stewart. You see these guys contributing this year in a deep wide receiver core?
I see both of these guys contributing legend. And first off, I'm going to talk about Robert Foster, but he's going to get his time. I see him contributing, and I see Ardarius Stewart contributing. When you talk about Ardarius Stewart, I have to bring up one of the passes in the 8-day game where Cooper Bateman he led Stewart a little too much on one of the passes, and Stewart has the awareness to tip the ball away from the defensive back and then relocate it in midair, brings it back down, and goes 27 yards down the field. I mean, that takes serious hand-eye coordination that I don't even think PlayStation 4 or Xbox 360 has taught yet. I mean, that takes some sheer hand-eye coordination to tip the ball away from a defensive back, go around the defensive back, relocate the ball in midair, and have the presence of mind to bring the ball back down and then go 27 yards down the field. I mean, that is just sheer fundamental hand-eye coordination that Microsoft has to catch up to. I don't think Microsoft's gotten that memo yet. But I honestly feel like Stewart and Robert Foster will definitely be some key contributors in this Alabama receiving corps coming into the fall because it's just so much talent with with those two, and especially Cam Sims. And even Raheem Dawkins, who put in two receptions for 28 yards. So the receiving core, the talent, is right there. It's just going to be the battle of outside of Amari Cooper and Christian Jones, and, of course, Chris Black, who put in 78 yards and a touchdown. The question is, who wants it? Who wants to be out there? That's going to be the question.
Do you feel like this is the best receiving core in the country, hands down?
I honestly feel like it is. I mean, you got Amari Cooper, who's coming back 100% healthy. You have Christian Jones, who's he's a threat anywhere on the field. You have Chris Black, in my opinion. If Lane Kiffin really turns him loose, this is breakout season written for him. You have O.J. Howard, who might think the same thing, and especially if he develops into a more consistent blocker. And then you have the guys like Cam Sims, Raheem Falcon, Robert Foster, or Danny Stewart, that if you plug them anywhere, it's going to be a nightmare for opposing linebackers and secondaries, because these guys are all versatile, they all have speed, and they all have great hands. It's the fact that whoever is under center next season, which the notion is being Jacob Coker, you got to be godly blessed, because the talent's going to be right there.
Yeah, I think it's clearly the best receiving core in the country. I mean, when you consider the fact that Stewart and Robert Wood, I mean, you're talking about two guys that are probably your fifth and sixth wide receivers on this team. And, I mean that is an amazing collection of talent. It really is. You talked a little bit about the offensive line. I'd like to get you to elaborate on it a little bit more. Do you see this as a major weakness going into the season, or do you see this thing working itself out?
I see it working itself out, Legend, and like Thomas mentioned, Miller Cristobal is going to have his work cut out for him, but I feel like if he can get, because the offensive line is the domino effect. If you get one guy to buy in, then most of the time everything else falls in place. So for Miller Cristobal, if he can get Austin Shepherd, Aaron Guanjo, and Ryan Kelly to work cohesively together, those three will work with Grant Hill, Leon Brown, Cameron Robinson, and get those guys to fall in line. It only takes one to buy in to get everyone else into the same system. So with Mario Cristobal, his work has to be cut out with getting the leaders to buy in. Once you get the returning starters to buy in to what you're trying to say, and try to get this Lane Kiffin offense to be as prolific as Alabama wants it and as the fan base wants it, it all starts with getting the leaders on the offensive line to buy into the program. The process works. There's no doubt that the process works. We've seen it work. We've seen it unfold. But in order for the process to work, the players, the leaders on that line, have to buy in and themselves recognize that the process works. So it starts with Quanjo, Kelly, and Austin Shepherd, and then working with Mario Cristobal, and in return with them working with him, they can also work with Grant Hill, Cameron Robinson, and everyone else on this line to get them to understand the process of trying to be that dominant offensive line heading into the 2014 season.
One area that I was not impressed with was particularly the punting and the kicking. And that's an area that we overlook a lot of times when you start to evaluate a team. But those positions can cost you a game, as the University of Alabama well knows. Particularly at field goal, we have been, the last few games we have lost have been simply because we could not kick a field goal. Are you concerned about the kicker and punter situation as we enter the season?
I am very concerned, Legend. Red flag. Serious red flag. You talk about the ties that Alabama has with Texas, and you bring in Alec Morris, 6'3", 230 pounds, from Allen, Texas, and before Jacob Coker puts his John Hancock on his letter of intent to come to the University of Alabama, people thought that Alec Morris is going to be the guy under center to start next season. But when you have Alec Morris punting the football in the A-A game, the man had more punts than throws. The man was 3 for 7 passing for 9 yards and interception, but punting, I mean, good Jesus. The man had 15 punts for both sides and averaged 38.4 yards a punt. Now, that's not sexy on paper at all, 38.4 yards a punt. I mean, he had 4 punts for 40-plus yards, but he's not a punter. He's a quarterback. He's not a punter. And the only reason why he was handling those duties is the guy that Alabama recruited from Denver, Colorado, J.K. Scott, does not get here until the fall. So when J.K. Scott gets here, hopefully that situation has itself out. Now, J.K. Scott has some huge shoes to fill because, though, Cody Mandel was really ever the product of conversation. Cody Mandel was a weapon for Alabama last season. You're talking about Mandel, out of bed, 63 punts, over half of those punts, 10 teams inside the 15-yard line. I mean, Mandel averaged 27 yards a punt. So he was a major key for Alabama last season. And when you go over to the field goal aspect, Adam Griffith is going to have to step up. You miss a 30-yarder in the 8A game. You had one block. He is going to really have to step up. Alabama, outside of Van Tiffin, back in 1985, and, of course, Jamie Christensen in the middle 2000s, Alabama has not had that consistent kicker that you can bet your last dollar on. I mean, Lee Tippin was great in 2009, his senior year, and, of course, Jeremy Shelley had his poetic justice pardon moment in the 2012 BCS title game. But outside of course, Van Tiffin and Jamie Christensen, I haven't been very, very confined and concrete on these Alabama place kickers. And hopefully Adam Griffith is the one guy to prove me wrong, but he's going to have to get consistent. The kicker that Alabama has recruited outside of him is going to get consistent. And it starts with getting the right leg, the right trajectory on the football, whether you're kicking from the left hash, the right hash, or even the middle of the field. It just starts with keeping yourself calm and visualizing that ball going through the goalpost and just getting a good way to start, getting the most neck strength on that ball, getting it up into the air. And I'm pretty sure Saban has these guys in line of trying to find out who's the guy that's going to be able to kick the field goals for Alabama this year. Honestly, in my opinion, I feel like they should have a kick for tuition, a kick for a role on the team. I feel like Saban should go out there and get fans who can kick field goals, let the fans out there kicking, and wish fans to kick the field goal the furthest, put a fan on the team and give the fan a scholarship. You look at it, that's how Texas Tech found that kicker. You know, Texas Tech put one of the fans from the stands and had a kick for tuition, and the fan made a 58-yard field goal, and lo and behold, the fan was the kicker for the team the next day.
Yeah, I remember that. They had a tryout for the fan. It might be a way that one of our listeners could get on the team. Hey, Rock, you might make the team. You learned how to kick a field goal, buddy.
I still got some eligibility, Coach. Put me in. I'm ready to play.
I'm very concerned about these special teams. Like I said, that's an area that don't get discussed much when you're talking about the evaluation of a football team. But, I mean, I had to agree with Stephen. I mean, Adam Griffin, I mean, it goes back to that 108-yard run by Chris Davis. I mean, he has not been overly impressive. I mean, he came out highly recruited. But I remember when he ran on the field, I was thinking, man, this guy looks like he's in the third grade or something here. I'm kind of concerned about this field goal. But, I mean, this is an area of great concern, in my opinion. And it definitely has to be one that the coaches are concerned about going into the season, because we know as Alabama fans, field goals can cost you championships. Field goals cost us the Auburn game. It cost us the LSU game that year. I mean, so I mean, this is an area that I am very concerned about going into the season for sure. Rock, what's your view on this?
On place kicking, I think that Adam Griffith has a head full of snakes. I don't know why that. I was honestly taken aback by that whole thing. Then punting, we'll see. I think, you know, along with the offensive line, that is going to be a position where the whole thing is a work in progress. And it takes a better football mind than mine to fix some of those issues because, holy cow, that place-kicking thing just – it blew my mind on Saturday, and every time I think about it, it blows my mind. It's just bad.
Yeah,
juju.
I think it's an area of deep concern for the University of Alabama. So I know it's one of mine. It's probably at the top of my list going into the season. I'm not very comfortable with Adam Griffin at all, and I'm sure not comfortable that Alex Moore is kicking 15 points a day in a game. Looks like we're recruiting all these great players. We need to recruit a great kicker and a great punter. Hey, Steven, you mentioned Reggie Ragland and Dylan Lee. Who were some of the other young players on defense that kind of met expectations, in your opinion, on Saturday?
Well, outside of Dylan Lee and Reggie Ragland, of course, I also mentioned Tony Brown, who had the five tackles and an interception and a play in the non-contact jersey. But I was also impressed with DJ Pettway. DJ Pettway is starting to really earn his spot back at the University of Alabama, a young man, two tackles, and took a 29-yard interception out of Blake Sears for a touchdown. And as I was watching it happen, I kind of got a flashback of 2010 BCS title game where big 300-plus-pound Marcel Darius takes the shovel pass away from Garrett Gilman and kind of pirouettes his way as he might go and say it down the field for a touchdown in that game. And though DJ Pettway wasn't as big as Marcel Darius is, it was still a shock to see watching DJ Pettway take the interception and go 29 yards for a touchdown. So I was impressed with Pettway. Jaron Reed showed some versatility and some ranginess in that A-Day game, being able to get in and stuff the run and cause some havoc back there in the backfield. He had a couple of tackles in that game. Linebacker Walker Jones had four tackles in the football game. I was very interested to see what he was going to be able to do. And even Reuben Foster, that is a tough player right there. You talk about going in head first, hitting Kenyon Drake in the hole. Now, Kenyon Drake did put up a second and third effort to get that first down on a third and two. But Reuben Foster plays with reckless abandon. I mean, he plays with no care in the world. The guy goes into the hole, bang, head first, taking on Kenyon Drake, and had a slight concussion after the game, had to be taken off the field. But you talk about a player that's going to be a head hunter and will hit anything no matter what. Reuben Foster's that guy, and I love the energy he brings onto that field.
As we enter the season, another area that we've touched on is the secondary. Do we have any – I know we don't have no more Dre Kirkpatricks back there. We have some players that are freshmen that who could develop in them play into that position. But if Eddie Jackson don't come back, how big of a concern is the secondary in your opinion?
I think it's a concern because Eddie Jackson really had a great spring. He was one of Alabama's more consistent quarterbacks. But I feel like with Cyrus Jones there, who showed promise last season, 25 tackles, a sack, and an interception, I felt Cyrus Jones there, of course, Marlon Humphrey coming in the fall, Tony Brown, and then at safety, well, not safety, we'll say corner, we have Bradley Silby, Maurice Smith. Bradley Silby is one of the more faster cornerbacks on the Alabama Crimson Tide. I mean, at safety, you have Nick Perry, Jerick Williams, and Landon Collins, who is the leader of that secondary, Geno Smith, and, of course, Lawrence Hootie Jones. I don't think it would be a major concern. It's a concern because you want Eddie Jackson at full strength, being that he was more of the consistent corners. with guys like Nick Perry, Landon Collins, and Geno Smith, those leadership guys, I feel like those guys are going to really help with Cyrus Jones, Antonio Brown, Marlon Humphrey, getting them where they need to be on the field. So I don't think it'll be a catastrophic concern. I feel like going into the season, the secondary is still going to be, I think they're still going to be intact, just with the fact of Landon, Geno, Jerick Williams, and Nick Perry, these guys coming back from last season. I think the secondary will be fine. I think they'll gel and adjust well.
This week, Greg McElroy made the comment, and Andre Ware also made the comment, that the Auburn Tigers is the clear-cut favorite in the SEC West as we enter to the season. Do you share that same opinion, or do you have a different opinion?
No way, legend. Oh, no. They are not the clear-cut favorite, and this is why. Number one, yes, Nick Marshall displayed some ability to pass the football last season. As we enter into this season, this is his first full off season in the OTAs, in the practices, in the camps, with the team and with the coaching staff. Next season, it's going to be less of the Gus Malzahn offense and more of, can Nick Marshall really dissect down plays, really dissect down defenses, really be able to get the ball out in a fast release between 2 and a 6 second release? Can he really place the ball in the right spots and really control that football team? If you look at, there's no more Trey Mason. So can Corey Grant and Cameron Artis Payne really handle the running back production? If you look at defense, Auburn lost two critical defensive linemen and those three equally in D4 to the draft. Can Auburn really supply a pass rush? Can the linebacking corps really step up and replay? And that secondary that Auburn had last year who just got torched, can they really dig in their cleats to the ground and really play sound fundamental football? It's going to be a transition for Auburn next season, because if you look at it, Gus Malzahn has won with most of Gene Chizik's players. This is going to be a time for Gus Malzahn to really dig in and evaluate himself as a coach in this offense. Does he really lean more towards running the ball and moving clock, or does he give Nick Marshall the chance to really settle in and really develop into being that quarterback that he's supposed to be? Because Nick Marshall is a senior coming into next season, and NFL scouts are going to start to look at him. And in order for NFL scouts to look at him, he has to be able to throw and pass the ball efficiently. I do not think Auburn's the clear-cut favorite, and the second reason why I don't think so, Auburn did not go home with the crystal ball. That was Florida State. So Alabama is still the measuring stick to be looked upon. Because of the fact that Auburn did not come home with the crystal ball, and because of the fact that this is going to be Nick Marshall's first full offseason into 2014 with this system.
There are several teams in the SEC that appear to be in a little bit of trouble. One of those teams appears to be LSU. They've lost Mettenberger. They've lost Landry. Odell Beckham Jr. to the NFL draft. They've had some issues down there also with some players. Do you see LSU slipping in the SEC West a little bit, and this being an Alabama and Auburn fight in the upcoming season?
Well, hold on, legend. We've been going about 45 minutes strong, and we actually have another caller on the line. So why don't we take a quick break? Steven, it's been great having you. Hope you can call back next week. We'll take our next caller, and then I'll answer your question. How's that sound?
Hey, Steven, appreciate you being on, buddy. Great stuff.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys, for having me.
All right, we're going to take a quick break on Bams Radio, and we'll be back with more Bama Talk.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. with Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice in fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands at a fraction of what other chain stores charge. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama, on Highway 31. Come see us or check out our website at www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com.
www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
And we are back on another Wednesday edition of BAMS Radio. If you missed the past 45 minutes, we had Stephen Smith from Touchdown Alabama join us. You are live with the legend and Thomas the Rock Watts. I'm going to go in and bring our next caller on. Word to callers, I am unable to screen because it's just legend and I, so I'm going to be bringing you on live. So just kind of hang with me and just help me out. Anyway, is this the Bama poet that I was told was calling in?
Yes.
Well, I was told that you actually have a poem for us. So do you have it ready to roll? Well, can do me a favor real quick. Can you give us a call back? Your cell connection is really, really rough, and we're getting, like, every third word. I'll keep an eye on you on the board, but just give us a call back, and we'll get you on I'll get you on as soon as I can. But until then, legend, I will answer your question about LSU. And LSU is in a really interesting spot. They have had a ton of people declare for the NFL draft over the past couple of years. Is the quarterback that filled in for Zach Mettenberger any good? He won a game, which is something to be lauded, something to be applauded. That's a good thing. But it's not like he's done much else. Do I think Cam Cameron's a really good offensive coordinator? Absolutely. But look at the talent disparity that's starting to emerge. Nick Saban raided LSU's backyard for every Louisiana for every good prospect aside from Leonard Fournette. So LSU's still bringing in strong recruits, but it's not going as gangbusters. Are they going to be a good team? Yes, but they're kind of like Alabama. They're filling in some holes at key positions, and do they have a chance? Well, sure, they've been good long enough that they have a chance. But they enter the season surrounded with questions. So I think they could definitely move into the conversation with Alabama and Auburn for top of the West. It helps that Alabama has to go to Death Valley next year. But if you told me to pick Alabama LSU right now, even in Death Valley, I'd take Alabama by 7. It's the best way I can answer it for you.
Yeah, I think the SEC West is really setting up as a State of Alabama showdown. When you look at LSU, I think they are slipping. They might even slip towards the Florida direction, which has become a disaster. I agree with you. They do have an outstanding offensive coordinator, but there's some major questions down there, especially at wide receiver. They're counting on a couple true freshmen, and we know what that means. That can be a major, major problem. I see LSU slipping. I really do. And you would have to agree that Texas A&M without Johnny Manziel, that don't sound too good. It really don't. That don't sound good at all without Johnny Manziel at quarterback at Texas A&M. So, I mean, I really see it as an Alabama and Auburn fight going into this season. I mean, who besides Alabama and Auburn, Rock, has an opportunity? I mean, everybody talks about Ole Miss, but I don't see Ole Miss making that jump. But they might be better. They've recruited really well. I really like Tony Connor. I really like a couple of their players. But, I mean, this thing's setting up as an Alabama and Auburn showdown. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. I think that the inside track is Alabama versus Auburn. But I have a little more faith in Ole Miss. Remember, they had that great recruiting class a couple of years ago. Those kids have been on campus. This will be their second year. Do I think Hugh Freeze is a motivator of men and just an overall excellent excellent coach? I think that's a bit of a stretch. I think he's good. I don't think he is knock-your-socks-off amazing. But, again, I think they'll be a good team. I think it's tough. You know, one of the things we will always say, I know I've said it on this program after A-Days in the past, there's going to be some surprise weird team in the SEC West that's going to come out of nowhere. Past couple of years, it was Texas A&M. I think Mississippi State has a shot. Now, I think Dan Mullen is an anchor for that program. But could they do it? Maybe. But if you had for me to pick the number three team right now, I'd take LSU. But the LSU-Ole Miss game could really decide that position in the West right now. Question for you, Legend, from chat. Who do you have in the East? This is from King of Twitter. Who do you have coming out of the East?
I got a toss-up between Georgia and South Carolina. I'm not high on Florida at all. I think Florida lost several players, key players from a bad team. I see Muschamp as a total disaster. Missouri has issues. Of course, they lost Dorham Green Beckham. That was a huge loss, in my opinion, for them. Mock's a decent quarterback, but again, they've lost their quarterback. I really think it comes down to Georgia and South Carolina. Steve Spurrier has been talking that this may be his best team. I don't really see that. They lost a couple key players, too, particularly Clowney and Quarles on that defense. So if I had to pick it today, I would pick Georgia to win the SEC East. I think when you look at that running back tandem that they got coming back and their quarterback, I really like the quarterback they got this year. I know he's be a first-time starter. Of course, he started the bowl game when Murray was hurt and a couple other games after Murray was hurt. But I really like Georgia in the East this coming year. A lot of people high on South Carolina. I'm not high on South Carolina. I mean, I like South Carolina. A lot of people keep talking Florida. I'm not big on Florida. I'm really not. Missouri might play into it. But outside of that, Tennessee, I still think, is a 500 team at best. And I just don't see nobody else in the East that's really going to make a statement over there. So I'm going to pick the Georgia Bulldogs to come out of the East.
Well, I could definitely see that, but let's shift gears back. The Bama poet has called back, and I hope you have a better connection. So, poet, I know you have a poem for us. Let's hope your connection's better. What you got?
Hey, can you hear me better?
Yeah, it's great. Thanks so much for calling back. I really appreciate it.
That's fine. I was up by the highway, so I had to shoot back down to the house.
Anyway, you have a poem for us, I believe. That's what Bird had said to me.
I actually didn't know that. We were just discussing my 50, but you know what? About 5 minutes before you got me on a while ago, I did write one. I just started booming. I wrote one called Roll Tide Life.
Sounds cool.
Am I on the air yet?
Yep.
You are live.
Okay, sorry.
No, you're fine.
Okay, it says, I was really impressed with number 17, Mr. Kenyon Drake. Row tie row through powerhouse, crimson icing on our capstone cake. Be on the lookout for Mr. Cooper, Bateman, RTR version of Johnny Utah. When pigs fly, hogs go mild. Yeah, it'll probably be Arkansas. I can't see. I'm in the dark. Hold on 1 second. Sorry about the God almighty. He'll beat the brakes off Arkansas. Our hometown hero, by ground or air, main man O.J. No doubt he'll play lights out on many road tide day. Also the X-Factor, Alabama watchman, calls it like he sees it. With Alabama Nation, he's already a big-time hit. Last, certainly not least, the processor. Big dog, cool cat, gridiron, guru professor. Round here, that's road tide life. FBS, no team wants to play us twice.
I like that.
I was a little nervous. Sorry about that. But, you know what? That makes number 51 now. I wrote one for every game the year we beat Notre Dame the other year. I actually wrote one about the girls' softball championship. I wrote one about the boys' golf championship. And I have the girls. Remember, I don't have the golf one memorized yet. But almost 51, I might probably got 10, 12 of them memorized.
I like that. I like that Johnny Utah. I like that. Cooper Bateman, Johnny Utah.
Coach Paul W. Bryant was the Bear, and Gene Stallings was Biebs, and they always talk about the process. I feel like Nick Saban's the processor, you know?
Nice. Well, give us another one that you can't remember.
Okay, how about the girl? You know what? I was challenged by a good friend that I met through Facebook, a Bama fan, Dan, out of Gardendale. He sent me a black and white photo of men and women at the train station in Tuscaloosa when they first came back from out in California, going out there to play Washington, the first Rose Bowl. It said, 4 score 7 years ago, Alabama won the first national title. He said, this year make number 15. Now, that's the dynasty, Roll Tide forever. He said, I want you to write a poem about the first national championship. He said, name of its first train. He said, you got to use the term 4 score 7 years ago in it. You know what? I got so mad for about a week, I wouldn't pick up my pen. And I was in the shower. I said, you know what? He don't think I can do this. I spent about a month on it. Not that I didn't have, I guess, some good stuff, I reckon. I just wanted it perfect. But, of course, you know, we can't make stuff perfect. But it's named First Train. All aboard, little did the world of college football know it would never be the same. Start of a dynasty for 22 Bama boys on a week-long ride on that first train. Not a single clue. Greatness was on the same track with destiny in 1925. Brought to you in part by the little-known almighty Alabama Crimson Tide. Magical regular season shut down 8 out of 9 teams. They lived a goose egg nightmare, only scoring against Bama in their wildest dreams. Birmingham Southern managed to muster up a mere 7, while the freak of nature Alabama stood at the college doorsteps of heaven. Their journey included a stop at the Grand Canyon along the way, as they daydreamed of the showcase showdown on New Year's Day. At the half, powerful Washington Huskies, 12, the farm boys from the heart of Dixie down south, 0. In the third, turned into the game that changed the entire South, while the big boys from the West Coast ran into an ambush of hardcore smash mouth. None of the college analysts gave our university a single ray of hope until the explosion of future Hollywood Cowboy MVP, the Dothan Antelope. Yes, sir, Pooley Herbert with his partner in crime, Johnny Mac Brown. dynamic duo exploded for 20 to secure the trophy, go home and start up title town. Yes, it was the Capstone's first national championship coach, Mr. Wallace Wade. Mush, mush, you Huskies, Washington, you just got played. It was 4 score and 7 years ago, with great-granddaddy Watchman yelling and screaming, "Roll Tide, roll." No doubt the first national title captured and confirmed all of America's attention. 87 years later, we're still number one, not to mention. Nowadays, all the collegiate powerhouses all jockeying for position in hopes that one day they can chase down that Houndstooth tradition. Yes, truly the start of something special for the Alabama Crimson Tide that all began with a week-long first train ride. Roll Tide, roll.
I like it.
That's great.
That's just probably kind of one of my longer ones, but, you know, I wrote for 10 or 12 years. A woman I was with destroyed it in about 15 minutes, broke my heart. 4 year, Alabama beat LSU. Toby Keith came out with Red Solo Cup. I got caught in the crossfire, and it ain't stopped yet. And first I wrote one about Alabama and LSU, Low Tide Party. But the first 3 words of the poem was "No Notre Dame." That's how I started it. And, of course, we got into next season.
So well,
nice.
That was kind of wild.
I like that.
How about the girls' softball? This, you know, we should have did the ladies first. You know we're going to get in trouble. The ladies first. But, anyway, when it came down to game three against Oklahoma, you know, of course, Oklahoma had won the first one, Bama won the second one. Other teams were gone. And, rain delay. And from the time I heard they were supposed to play the game, it ended up starting sooner. I missed the game. And I found out, you know, Bama won. I said, I freaked out. I went, what am I going to write? What am I going to write? I didn't get to sit. I sat down and wrote Titletown Train in about 10 minutes, which, you know, since we'd won in football, ladies gymnastics and ladies golf and then softball, train coming through, you know. Title Town Train. It goes, choo-choo, Roll Tide, first class, A-Train, J-Train, RTR, all aboard, except for the Lady Vols, Sun Devils, Golden Bears, and Sooners. They all just got outscored. Nope, not the Amtrak. It's the Houndstooth locomotive that swept the station, headed back to Tuscaloosa, Bama Ladies, number one in all the nation. So awesome, the Capstone Cuties wearing the championship crown. Guess it's only fitting since they're headed home to the Title Town. The Young Guns of Norman, never ever heard of Thunder and Elephant coming down the track. Got bum rushed from behind, losing games 2 and 3 back to back. The horse that was pulling the sugar wagon tangled up his bridle while the Bama bombshell riding high on Big Al, fresh off the first national title. The talk went up for our university in college softball history, now that the winner of the NCAA champion is no longer a mystery. Congratulations, Bama ladies. A terrific number one hit. Unlike the other 7 teams in the College World Series, the Alabama Crimson Tide finished it. Roll Tide.
Well, those were excellent poems, and I want to thank you very much for calling in and sharing them with us. We do, unfortunately, have a couple of other callers, and we're going to change segments here in a little while. So do you have any shout-outs before we move on, Senior Poet?
I just want to say thank God, and a big shout-out to the people by a small town.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for calling us, and feel free to give us a call with more poems.
Anyway,
absolutely. He is not with us right now, but I will let him know.
We'll tell him I hope his son's, you know, I mean, hope his son feels better.
Will do. Thank you very much.
All right. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. Legend, we do have one other caller that I want to get through with before we bring Harry Clark on, and it's Bring the Pain. Pain, you are live on BAMS Radio. What you got for us this evening?
What's going on, guys?
Bring the pain.
How y'all doing all right this evening?
Good, brother. Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. Hey, I got a couple of things. I want to know, what is up with these Bama fans getting upset over a spring football game? Don't these people know that they are not going to show nothing until fall football? And I told some people on Twitter that Bateman is going to do better than Blake Sims. And what happened? Bateman done better than Blake Sims. Blake Sims sucks almost the whole game. And I'm telling, Coker's going to come in and he's going to beat out he's going to beat out Blake Sims, and I can tell you right now who's the backup's going to be. It's going to be Coker, Bateman, and Cornwell. That's going to be the three. That's going to be the backups.
Well, I like it.
Agree, or do y'all disagree with me?
I think Cornwell is going to get a red shirt, to be honest with you. Could he be third string? Maybe. I'm not sure if I buy that. But, Legend, what do you think?
I think Bring the Pain got some good points. I'm not sold on Blake Sims, so I kind of think it's a waste of time. But, I mean, he is, I guess you could call him a security blanket. I mean, if he had to play him, if he had to start a game, I wouldn't just say we didn't have a chance, but I kind of agree with Bring the Pain to the point. I kind of think it's a waste of time. I think you'd be better off to give the job to Jacob Coker and let some of these guys that played quarterback their whole lives have the second and third string. So I think Bring the Pain brings a valid point, but again, I do lean kind of towards you, Rock, but I do think Blake Sims still plays a part in this quarterback race. I think he's still, at worst, probably the backup to Jacob Coker going into the season.
Well, I could see that. Payne, what else you got? One more thing, then we got to move on to Kerry.
I can understand that. What do you think about the five people that are coming in, like Humphrey, J.K., and all of them other ones? Since Griffin didn't do all that well, you think J.K. is going to take over the field goal, or what do y'all think about that?
Well, I'm going to answer that, but quickly, we're going to bring Kerry on right after I answer this point, but I think that they all have a chance to compete, and I think that's something that will a storyline worth pursuing over the summer. And Kerry, I am proud to bring you on, and you say you have an answer for Payne's question. What you got for us?
I do, and hello, people of BAMS. How y'all doing?
Howdy, Kerry.
Well,
good, brother.
The kicking situation obviously is not going to be decided till August, and there not only is J.K. Scott, who was signed as a punter, going to be auditioning as a kicker along with Adam Griffith. There is a very well-respected walk-on coming in from Lafayette, Louisiana, by the name of Gunnar Rayburn. Gunnar is a good name for a kicker, but his name is Gunnar Rayburn. He has gone to all of the Chris Saylor kicking schools and camps, and he's considered a steal as an invited walk-on. So those three guys will all compete for the kicking job in August. I can't predict a winner yet because I haven't seen Scott and Rayburn kick. But I've seen Griffith kick, and I feel like he's got his hands full. I feel like Griffith will probably be the kickoff man, but I think one of those other two will be the field goal kicker when it all comes down to the West Virginia game.
I like it. I like it.
Well, I just want to thank Bring the Pain real quick for calling in. It's great to hear from it.
Great
if you
job.
Have a question,
good job.
If you have a question for anyone on the panel, give us a call at 714-510-3707. We would absolutely love to hear from you. But, Kerry, during the first hour, we spent a good long time talking about our impressions of 8A. We had Stephen Smith from Touchdown Alabama on for a little while. So I just want to ask you before we jump right into it is, what was your impression of the 8A game? You know, are you kind of on the fence with this whole thing, or what do you think?
I'm not on the fence about any of it. I have strong opinions about everything that we saw Saturday. I sent out a tweet, and I've never had a tweet get favorited and retweeted more than this one, Rock and Legend. That tweet was simply this. The happiest man in Bryant-Denny Stadium today is Jacob Coker. And that is because of what we saw from Blake Sims. And you know what? This is not a slam Blake Sims fest. But something I noticed, I haven't watched the entire game over like I normally do on my DVR. I'm going to get to that when I have time. But the highlights I watched, something I didn't catch while I was in the press box, and I might be the only one on the panel that didn't catch this. But on that late touchdown drive that Blake Sims led to get the game to within respectability, the secondary on the white squad that he was throwing against consisted of three white walk-ons. I don't know who the fourth person was, but three of them back there were Caucasian walk-ons that Chris Black burnt for a touchdown. Okay? Nothing against those kids. They play a big role in helping our team get ready every week. But if the real starting secondary had been back there, I'm going to say for the record that touchdown never gets scored. And Blake doesn't pad his stats there at the end. I think going into that drive, he was something like 5 for 15. I said last week, and Drew echoed it, that going into A-Day, our biggest question with Blake Sims was, yes, he did great in two scrimmages that about 3,000 people attended each. But what's he going to do when there's 73,000 there? And which, by the way, number one in spring game attendance, yet the lowest of the Saban era. That's the backlash of having it on Easter weekend. But we still were number one in the country in attendance. But getting back to Sims, he showed that he's not yet ready to be the quarterback of the Alabama Crimson Tide. You got to do it every week. Now, did AJ have some bad scrimmages while he was at Alabama? Yeah, he had some bad ones. But, Jacob Coker was there. He was on the sidelines. He's been Skyping with Lane Kiffin, learning the plays. He's got a DVD of our offense. He's got a huge, thick playbook. He's been working out religiously down in Mobile, burning the skin off the hands of some poor South Alabama receiver. But I have said all along that I thought it was going to be Jacob Coker. Now, what I said last week may still prove true as far as we may open the season with a two- or three-game competition like we did with Phillip Sims and A.J. McCarron back in 2011. But I think Coker's going to seize the job sooner than the third game. They may both play against West Virginia. But I think when it's all said and done, Coker is going to win the job. And as for Blake, he will be the backup. He will probably have some packages they use him on, maybe once a half, where he'll come in and run a little wildcat, read option type deal. But the starting quarterback is going to be Jacob Coker. I'm telling y'all right now. I've been saying this, gosh, since October. And what I saw Saturday reinforced it further. There had been talk all spring. The team has really embraced Blake Sims. This is Blake Sims' team, blah, 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 blah. And you know what that reminded me of, guys? That reminded me of because I've been doing this for a long time. That reminded me of going to some scrimmages early in the season back in 1995, and a reporter asked Coach Gene Stallings, "Well, Coach, he's a fifth-year senior. There's a lot of talk about this being Brian Bergdorf's team. Well, Stallings was not ready to name Bergdorf the starter. He wanted Freddie Kitchens to compete, and legend knows where I'm going with this. Stallings has said, this is not Brian Bergdorf's team. This is Alabama's team. Well, this is not Blake Sims' team. He's going to play a role of some sort, but I don't think it's going to be the starter. I really don't, guys.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely, Kerry. And that's a great illustration of you want the guy on the field that's going to give you the best opportunity to win, and I'm just not confident in Blake Sims. I mean, I go back to what I said in the first hour. I didn't like him at quarterback last year, the year before, and I don't like him now. I don't care if he'd have lit it up on A-Day. I'm just not big on taking running backs and turning them into quarterbacks. And if I ain't mistaken, Blake Sims came to Alabama as a running back, not a quarterback. And
well, he played quarterback
in
high school. He played quarterback in high school, and they got to Alabama, and they tried him at safety, and then they tried him at running back. And then finally, his third year there, they put him back at quarterback.
They might should have kept him at safety.
Well, I think he'd have had a better chance to play on this coming year's team, a valuable minute. He'll have some kind of role like I said, Kiffin will find a way to use him in the offense a little bit, but the starter that gets 90% of the snaps, to me, is going to be Coker. And, but that was by far not the only thing we saw today. We talked about the place-kicking woes. We saw a third-string quarterback punt 15 times and average 38.5 yards a kick, 38.4 to be precise, down three inside the 20. I'll give him that, or inside the 10. But he's not going to be the punter this fall. He's not. The punter is going to be J.K. Scott. They signed him to do it. And unless he comes in here and completely flubs, which is possible. Now, you recall, when Cody Mandel won the punting job 4 years ago, the punter was supposed to be a scholarship kid from Thomasville named Jay Williams. And he didn't get it done in any of the scrimmages, and Mandel beat him. So, it's not a given that J.K. Scott's going to be the punter, but I'm 90% sure he will be. I don't know who the kicker will be. It could be Rayburn, the walk-on, the invited walk-on. It could be Scott. And if Griffith gets his act together and goes to some kicking camps all over summer, it might be him. I don't know. Could be any of those three guys. I think we got a really good idea of who the offensive line is going to be. Cam Robinson has gone from starting the spring at third string to the first string left tackle. Now, did he get called out in the postgame press conference by Saban for blocking the wrong guy on the interception for a touchdown by Petway that Sims threw on a screen pass that the guy he was supposed to block got the interception, Petway? Yeah, he got called out, but he's a true freshman. I mean, he was in high school in December. So he's come a long way since the start of the spring. I think we know that the right tackle will be Austin Shepherd. I think we know the center is Ryan Kelly. And we are relatively sure that, at least for the first game, the guards will be Ari Quanjo on the left and Leon Brown on the right. As Drew likes to remind us on a weekly basis, and rightly so, when Dominic Jackson gets here, it may be different. But, we heard the same thing last year about Leon Brown, and his first start was the Sugar Bowl. So you never know how quick a JUCO guy will pick it up. We saw what a great receiving core that we have. We saw what a good running back core we have, even though it was only in small spurts because Yeldon had a great game, by the way. I mean, the guy's been at Alabama three springs, and he's been the Dixie Howell most valuable player of the A-Day game three times. That's pretty dang good. I didn't see the fumbling problems that were apparently present in the second scrimmage. And speaking of the second scrimmage, we had a great guest last week, longtime Bams listener and tailgater who comes with us every week, Coach Jim Adams, defensive line coach at Montevallo, who works for Andrew Zhao. He came on and gave us some insight into that second scrimmage last week, which was a very valuable part of the show. We have another gentleman joining us after 9 tonight. Drew is going to come on around 8:30, and around a little after 9, Drew's coworker at Alabama Intel, William Redfish Barger, is going to join BAMS for the first time. And William was a former Alabama player under Coach Stallings, and he was a guy who was at the second scrimmage, so he can give some insight maybe on the difference in the second scrimmage and A-Day. But I got to give Payne credit on his call. The offense that we saw Saturday was about as vanilla as you can get. I don't think Kiffin was probably too happy that he had to hold a bunch of stuff back, but I think he understands. He's been a head coach before. You can't give the whole country watching on ESPNU your offense on A-Day. So they didn't. Other than a little bit more use of a fullback, they didn't do a whole lot different than they did last year. I thought the defense looked very good. I thought the pass rush was improved. Drew mentioned last week about Tim Williams. Tim stepped up big time. Jonathan Allen stepped up. DJ Petway stepped up. Jaron Reed stepped up. I saw a lot of really good things about the defense. I'm still a little worried about the cornerback situation. But once we get Tony Brown healthy and once Marlon and Eddie Jackson healthy and Marlon Humphrey learning the playbook, I think we'll be fine at corner as well. It really shouldn't matter until about the fourth game when we play Florida who the cornerbacks are, to be frank with you. Nothing against those first three opponents, but I think we can handle those three folks with our regular defense and our offense and all that. I think we'll be fine. West Virginia does run a hurry-up, no huddle, but it's more like the Ole Miss version than it is the Auburn version, to be honest with you.
Hey, Karen Rock, I'm going to get off in a few minutes. I know you got Drew coming on in a few minutes, but I love to hear Kerry's view The statement of the week from Greg McElroy and Andre Ware that the Auburn Tigers are the clear-cut favorite in the SEC West, did you take that away from the two A-Day games on Saturday, Kay? Is that kind of your view going into the season, or would you dispute them comments?
Well, I dispute the clear-cut part because Alabama's clearly got a better defense than Auburn does. Auburn's A-Day, I haven't watched the whole thing yet, Legend and Thomas. Auburn's A-Day was akin to the Mike Price A-Day where you put the first string against the third string and run the score up and then talk about how great your quarterback is. They had some guy playing defensive tackle that was a 6'2", 210-pound white guy, not even on scholarship, and they had the gall to call that their second defense. That was the damn third defense. There might have been some second stringers scattered on that defense, but they were wanting to put on a show for their fans, which they did. And they do have a great offense, I admit it. But one thing to remember about the Auburn offense, they lost the best left tackle in the country. Okay? He went pro. So, Nick Marshall's a real good quarterback, and this new receiver, Duke Williams, is good. And they've got some solid running backs. And they're going to outscore a lot of people. But you can only win so many 42-40 games before it catches up to you. So I don't agree that they're the clear-cut favorite in the West. Those people that made that statement didn't see Alabama's whole offense and didn't see Alabama's real starting quarterback. And if they'd seen either one or both, I don't think either one of those people would have said that. So,
yeah, I'm a little I'm a little worried when they start calling folks experts on ESPN because – I remember they had Mark Godfrey as an expert on the expert panel. So I was so worried about when they call folks experts on ESPN. And I agree with you. I think if you evaluate these rosters, which we do on a regular basis, I think there's no doubt who has the best accumulated talent on a roster, and that's definitely Alabama. But, hey, guys, I'm going to let you all have it. I know Drew's coming up in a few minutes. As always, love hanging out with you guys. And y'all do a great job, man. I'm proud to be a part of the team. I really am.
Thank you, brother.
Roll friggin' tide, baby.
Roll tide. That's right. I'll now entertain the questions of Thomas Watts, starting with why I didn't see him and his mom at the Bam's tailgate.
Well, to be honest, we got up a little late, but we got into town at about 11:30, got to the tent about, 11:45-ish. But we were there.
Then I only missed you by about 5 minutes.
That's okay. Mom had her cake and started crying. She was very, very surprised, which, you know, points for Thomas being a good son. I'll take it any time of the week. Well, I do have a question for you, Kerry, and I know you spoke a lot about the offense, and I do agree with you saying that we didn't see a lot, and I think the parts we did see, I was very impressed with some of the bootleg action and the fullback leaks that Kiffin ran a lot, because that's a Kiffin staple, and that's a different look. But what did you think of the defensive line? I thought that I was blown away by their performance.
I was impressed. I mean, I mentioned Petway, and I mentioned Jaron Reed.
Right.
I mentioned Jonathan Allen, and I mentioned Tim Williams, but I guess I should also mention A'shaun Robinson. He looked good. I don't think that Alabama has ever won a national championship with a nose guard of the caliber of Brandon Ivory. There's normally been somebody a little bit better than that at nose guard when we won a national championship, but you never say never. Brandon is a guy that's gotten better every year, and maybe this will be the year he really stands out. The nose guards at Alabama don't rack up a lot of stats because their primary job is to get double-teamed. And I don't know that Brandon is quite there yet where other teams look at the film and go, we got to double-team that guy. So I was really thinking when the spring started, and Drew was too, that Jaron Reed would move inside and end up being the nose guard, but he stayed at end the whole spring. So obviously I'm not there every day at practice. Perhaps the coaches feel that they can win a national championship with Brandon Ivory. Frankly, if they'd made a couple more plays last year, they might have won one last year with them. We'll never know. But, I thought the whole front seven, not just the defensive line, looked pretty good. I hated to see the injury to Foster, but we were assured by Saban that that's not anything serious. I thought Reggie Ragland really stepped up at inside linebacker. We know what DePriest could do, but we didn't really know what Ragland could do, and Ragland played very well Saturday. I liked how the outside linebackers were set up where they moved Denzel Duvall to Sam and started Xavier Griffin at the jack. I love that lineup. But that's all because Dylan Lee decided to screw up a second time. He would have been the Sam, and he ended up maybe the Sam by the time we played Florida. I'm not sure how long it's going to take Dylan Lee to get out of the doghouse. Even if he's not the starting Sam, he's still going to play, though. I just don't think he'll play West Virginia, like Drew said. I thought that overall the defense was solid. Maybe a little too solid for the fans who were hoping to see more offenses point of view. But one thing you got to remember about 8A games is the defense has seen these plays all spring, and they can pretty much – they know the checks. They know the formations. It's almost not fair, really, because they pretty much – they almost know what's coming. Not every play, but a lot of the plays, they know what's coming. They react accordingly. And, so you kind of expect to see the defense shut down the offense in a spring game. Alabama's was rigged more for competitiveness than Auburn's was. The way those teams were set up Saturday for Alabama, that was not going to be a 58-3 spring game score. Now, I thought it might be a little more high scoring than 17-13, but, it is what it is. Thomas, we'll talk a whole lot more football in a few minutes when Drew joins us, about 5 minutes. There's a whole lot more going on over at Alabama right now than football. We have a baseball team that took 2 out of 3 in Knoxville and really blew the Sunday game, could have won that one too, before laying an egg against Southern Miss in Tuscaloosa last night. But Alabama is still being projected, even after laying that egg, to host a regional by most national authors that cover baseball. The softball team won 2 last weekend and had a 3rd game rained out. They defeated Georgia Southern and North Carolina both. And then they went down to Hattiesburg. At the same time the baseball team was playing Southern Miss in Tuscaloosa, the softball team was playing Southern Miss in Hattiesburg and defeated them 12-0. The softball team currently has an RPI of 2, which puts you in a position to host both a regional and a super regional, which is the easiest path to Oklahoma City in the Women's College World Series. The baseball team, I'm not exactly sure what their RPI is, but they are in a position to host at least a regional, but probably not a super regional. But the baseball team has an extremely tough schedule coming up. They don't play any more slugs the rest of the year, really. They start off this weekend going to South Carolina, the Saturday and Sunday games both being televised by various outlets. Check your local listings. But South Carolina is a very good team. If Alabama, you hate to say, well, I'd be happy with 1 out of 3. But and Alabama's baseball team, unfortunately today, Thomas, announced that the normal Sunday starter, John Keller, has been suspended for this weekend and will not participate for a violation of team rules, no specifics yet given by Coach Gaspard. So I don't even know, and I don't even know if he knows yet, who he plans to start in the Sunday game. But my hope is they don't get to Sunday trying to avoid a sweep at the hands of South Carolina, because South Carolina is a very, very good baseball team. Very good. Probably the best team we've played all year. So a true test this weekend for the baseball team. But so far, they have done the job on the weekends. They've laid a couple of eggs on weeknights, losing in Tuscaloosa to people like UAB and Southern Miss. That should not happen. But I'm quite happy with the way they performed on the weekends, winning series after series. So good job there. The gymnastics team laid an egg in Birmingham Saturday with a chance to win the national championship by having only 1 of 2 seniors stay on the beam, and both ladies unfortunately fell off the beam. And that cost Alabama the national championship in gymnastics, and they ended up placing 4th as Florida and Oklahoma tied for 1st, something you very rarely see in a championship event. They tied for 1st, and rather than go to a tiebreaker, which would have given Florida the championship, those in charge decided to declare them co-champions. But Alabama would have been the undisputed champion had either girl stayed on the beam, but that did not happen. You hate to see it, but it is what it is. So both young ladies, DeAndra Milner and Kim Jacob, had wonderful careers at Alabama. Kim actually won the all-around on Sunday in the individual competition. And DeAndra Milner, no relation to D. Milner of football fame, but they came in the same year. She had a wonderful career as well. You just hated to see that happen on the last meet that they'll ever participate in. But as it is, you know, fourth is nothing to be ashamed of, but the tragedy is they had the ability to be first. So those are – oh, and in basketball recruiting, Alabama signed Jeff Garrett, a Gadsden native who had played his senior year in the Pensacola area. Jeff is 6'7", 210. We've talked about it many times with Drew. Jeff is now officially a member of the Crimson Tide basketball family. And Alabama has become a finalist for one of the top unsigned power forwards in America. Now, obviously, most of the good ones go in the early period, but Jackson Davis, 6'8", 220 from Lexington, Kentucky, narrowed his field, and actually he canceled an in-home visit with Billy Donovan tonight because he has narrowed his field to three teams, Butler, Alabama, and Rice. He was previously committed to Rice, and Rice had a coaching turnover, so they released him from his letter of intent. So technically he did sign early, but he was released from his letter when Rice had a coaching change. So Rice is a finalist along with Butler and Alabama, and most people think it's down to Bama and Butler. Now, Butler is a much shorter drive, Indianapolis, from Lexington than Tuscaloosa is, but all sources indicate that the entire family was blown away by their visit to Tuscaloosa this past weekend, and the other kids that have already signed, all four of them, have started a Fab Five to Tuscaloosa campaign that includes Jackson Davis, and they're tweeting him and texting him and all that kind of stuff. Devin Mitchell, particularly, who signed early with Bama, has done a wonderful job as a recruiter on Coach Grant's unofficial staff. So we're going to find out later this week, perhaps Friday or Saturday, the final destination of Jackson Davis. But it looks very good for Alabama right now after his visit this weekend. And Coach Grant had an additional visit with him today at his school. So, you know, you never see Billy Donovan throw Coach Grant a bone, but Donovan had never even seen Davis play in person. He got into the game really late, and that's probably part of the reason why the kid canceled the visit. And Donovan's probably going to get John Horford, the Michigan transfer, younger brother of Al Horford, and you don't need but so many posts in your signing class. So if Alabama can land Jackson Davis to complete a five-man signing class to go with the two transfers who sat out last year, Michael Kessens and Ricky Tarrant, you can look at that virtually as a seven-man class that would be really in the top 10 in the country, if not top five. So things are looking up there. And as we have now gotten to 8:32 p.m., hopefully Drew's going to Skype in here pretty soon. But up until that, that's just kind of a wrap-up of some things that are going on. And then there was Alabama got four commitments at the 8A, right after the 8A game Saturday, which Drew will go into in more detail. Four basically top 100 kids in America. It was a spring game haul, the likes of which no one can remember ever happening in all of college football. And then a fifth man added himself to the commitment list just today. Just during the time that I was driving home from work, a man who Drew and I have talked extensively about, Christian Bell, who plays defensive end at Hoover but will be an outside linebacker, a jack linebacker at Alabama, probably the top pass rusher in his class of 2015 in the state of Alabama. Every time I've ever seen Christian play for the last two seasons, he had at least one or two sacks every game I went to. So that's a great ad. He actually strongly considered Mississippi State, but he decided to sign on with Alabama. And Alabama is the consensus number one 2015 recruiting class in every ranking of every website and every person that draws breath right now. So it's shaping up to be another epic recruiting class, and we'll go into more details in that whenever Drew joins us. So there's really been a whole lot going on at Alabama. Baseball, softball, gymnastics, the tennis team, the women's tennis team, that is, which finished first in the regular season in the SEC, first time in their history, did get to the finals of the tournament before losing to Georgia. So they'll probably get a really good seed for the NCAAs when they announce those. A lot of really good things going on athletically down at the Capstone, Thomas. And I'm just going to have to get a breath while you think of another question. We wait on Drew, or we can take a break if you like.
Yeah, I was going to say, why don't we take a quick break?
That's a great idea.
While we're in a break, Drew just texted me. He's ready to go on. I'll get us set up while we're listening to jamming to some music. We will be right back for a little more Bands Radio.
Why be a Monday morning quarterback? when you can listen to BAMS Radio any day of the week. Get your podcast at BAMS Radio anytime right here at BAMSRadio.com.
So, what makes BAMS Tailgate so darn special?
Sunbelt Inflatable Tents can supply you with custom-designed tent for your tailgate needs. Corporations, businesses,
or just the most hardcore fans are the customers of Sunbelt Inflatable Tents.
Reach them at their website, www.sunbeltinflatabletents.com, and ask for Billy. Or call 251-247-1169 to order.
The FCC can add all the teams at once. We're still number one.
Roll Tide!
This is BAMS Radio.
And we are back for some more Wednesday night BAMS Radio. I am Thomas the Rock Watts. I'm joined by Kerry Clark, and I am proud to welcome Alabama Intel's finest, Drew DeArmond, to the broadcast. Drew, how you doing this evening?
Good, Rock. How are you? Good, Kerry. How you guys doing tonight?
Good deal. We're doing good, bud.
Good, man. I'm happy. The bell ringer that tolled for Alabama today. He's a guy I've had my eyes on for a year and a half, and good to hear him. Good to see him pull the trigger for Alabama. Good get for the Tide.
Drew, what does he bring to the table? I know the answer, but I want to hear it in your words.
Well, he's a 6'4", 220-pounder, carry long arms. Needs to build up his upper body, but he's a perfect Jack linebacker, in my opinion. You know, watched him at the Spain Park Combine. Very, very good pass rusher. Very good quickness, especially first step. Laterally quick. Just a guy that is a natural pass rusher, and I think it's something Alabama needs. And watched him for much of the Combine, interviewed him afterwards, and he's a young man that I think is – I still think he's underrated. I don't think he's got as many stars by his name as he should. But, again, I was excited about his commitment. I knew this was today when he went to see Coach Saban and, committed in person. That was his fifth trip since February, so I knew Alabama was well out in the lead. Now the interesting thing is going to be, is Darrell Williams, is he going to be a guy Alabama takes, Sam linebacker, because, there's a lot of – They're definitely trying to upgrade at LB in this class, but again, I'm not sure he's a sure take right now yet. It may come down to camp, but I like Darrell Williams a lot, and we'll see what happens there.
Well, Darrell is a good player. Let me say this: if Richard McBride goes to Auburn, I think Alabama might take Darrell, but I don't think they'll go to the same school.
Right.
Just a theory.
Right. I still am not sure Alabama's going to take Bradrick Shaw, even though with the way the running back board is shaking out right now, I think Jovan Robinson is an Auburn lean today, but that could change. Obviously, they're trying to get involved with Damian Harris, who visited for the A-Day game from Berea, Kentucky. But then, if those two guys are being nationally recruited, if those don't go your way, you've got Nick Gibson. We've talked about him before. And who knows with Bradrick Shaw. If he has a big senior year, they could get involved more heavily with Bradrick. So we'll have to wait and see there as well.
I like Bradrick, Drew, but the times I've seen him play, he impresses me more as a Mississippi State, Vandy type of guy.
Right.
I'm not saying he's not SEC. I just don't know that he's Alabama. Not my call, obviously, but here's the thing to consider about Bradrick Shaw, Drew. You and I both know that no less than three current members of the Alabama running back corps are on thin ice.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Not one, not two, three.
But three. I did that in my story last night. When I graded the position last night, Kerry, on the Alabama Intel, we published that this morning, I gave the position a B+ coming out of spring. And with Derrick Henry and T.J. Yeldon and then the talent level of Kenyon Drake, you think that'd be an A easily. But, again, there were still fumbling issues in the spring. And then when you've got Kenyon Drake, Tyron Jones, and all T. Tenpenny all running afoul of the law and or the academic police, that's where that dropped that outside an A. So, that you're right. There's three of them that need to, mature and grow up.
Well, I don't think either of us can say with certainty that those three guys will all be on the team next year.
Exactly.
I don't know that two of them will be on the team. Well, it's really a lot can happen between now and the fall. They may decide to just do an about face. I hope they do. But
absolutely,
there may be more running back takes in this class than we know just yet.
Yeah, obviously, with the young man from Vigor, he's a guy there was a lot of speculation about him maybe ending up at Auburn. Could still happen, but I think with Auburn taking two backs this weekend, and then obviously already with the commitment of Kerryon Johnson, heavily involved with Jovan Robinson, I think that ship has sailed a little bit. But it's going to be interesting to see how many backs Alabama takes. I think, without question, Kerry, we'll take at least two in this class. But if they lose one or two, you're right, they could take others.
Drew, Alabama, obviously Bell's commitment today was huge, and it is the most recent thing to happen. But Alabama had an epic recruiting day Saturday. Go ahead and recap those kids one at a time. Exactly.
Absolutely. Before I recap it, I want to say that a guy that we both have a lot of respect for in this business, who's as good a guy as I've ever, come across, Rodney Orr, talked to him a lot this weekend. And he called me and I broke the Calvin Ridley commitment to him. And then he broke Leo Lewis to me. He's like, Leo Lewis, holy cow. And so it was just, it was an insane day. We hearkened back to the Jabril Washington, Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, LaMichael Fanning of 4 years ago. But this was even crazier. And four guys, in my opinion, Kerry, they're just crucial. First, Calvin Ridley, wide receiver, 6'1", 190 from Monarch High School in Coconut Creek, Florida. Very, very good film. And to me, as good a wide receiver on tape as you're going to see in the 2015 class. I just think he's a guy that plays faster than his 40 time. I've heard he's running the 4.6 range. Does not look like that on film. Very, very good a hand. He's a guy that kind of idolizes Amari Cooper, could follow in his footsteps. Then his teammate, Sean Burgess-Becker, talked to him a Saturday night into Sunday. It was late. But he's very excited about being committed to Alabama. Watched the DBs closely, about a 6 foot, 205-pound safety at a need position. Physical kid, 71 tackles, 5 interceptions. You're very excited about him. Those two teammates, they had always planned to go to the same school. That was just a great deal right there. And, of course, Minka Fitzpatrick, 6'1", 185-pound corner, one of the best corners, I think, in the country. He got the ball rolling, and he was the one everybody expected. And then he set off a chain reaction, but he's from St. Peter's Prep in Jersey City, New Jersey. And they're not just known for basketball, I guess, in Jersey City anymore, because Minka is one of the best corners in America. He's a versatile kid. He can play the nickel and the dime. He could even be a safety, but he's so physical. I think he reminds me a lot of a little bit bigger version of Dee Milliner. Very, very good player. And I think he will be a huge get for Alabama at another need position, safety and corner or need position. And then, of course, the one I'm the most excited about, Leo Lewis. I mean, a little over 6 feet tall, 240 pounds, tremendous film, as good as any inside linebacker in the country, in my opinion, and one of the best overall linebackers in America. He's a guy that is from Brookhaven High School, and Brookhaven is the alma mater of one Jimmy John, who Alabama fans will remember in the past. But he's a guy; he's the first major kid to come out of there since Jimmy, and he was kind of unknown going into this year, but he's kind of been exploding. And he chose Alabama over Mississippi State and Ole Miss and some other suitors and LSU. But he just a guy you should be very excited about, because he's a heat-seeking missile, no question.
And then we had a guy that some industry insiders thought had committed, but as of today, he remains a West Virginia commitment at wide receiver. Talk about that young man.
Yeah, Jovan Durante. I think that commitment would be shaky at best, Kerry. He's from the actual high school, Northwestern in Miami, of Amari Cooper. He's very elusive on film. Looks like to me a perfect slot receiver for this class. He is a take. I mean, I know there was some speculation as to some people thought he might have tried to commit and didn't have a spot. That is not correct. I believe they would take him right now. He has a very, very close relationship with Mario Cristobal, was at one time committed to Florida International early in his high school career when Cristobal was the head coach there. They probably reminded him a little bit of T.Y. Hilton, the Colts receiver now that's lighting up the NFL, that Cristobal recruited to FIU. And the thing about that is that once Cristobal left, and once Durante's brother had finished his career at FIU, and I believe he has, Durante opened up the recruiting process, committed to West Virginia and their wide open style of offense. But as he stated today in an interview, Alabama's just on another level. And I think, to me, from reading what his comments and from talking to people that were around him in Tuscaloosa, I think it's a matter of time before he flips, Kerry. And I just think, he's also considering the Canes. But I think if Mario Cristobal continues what he's doing at Alabama this year, he's going to be the recruiter of the year in a landslide.
I think he's already got it wrapped up.
Yeah, I mean, the amazing thing I saw today from, my website does not really rank recruiting classes nationally, but when Bama Online comes out and says Alabama's 15 commits, if they stop right now, would be a top 10 class, that's pretty stout. And right now, Alabama looks like they're going to pull away and has a very, very good chance at yet another number one recruiting class. And that's just amazing considering, the run Nick Saban and the UA staff have been on.
I don't think anybody can catch him, Drew. I really don't. Not
I doubt it. I mean, there's 10 more spots, Kerry, give or take, and, maybe one or two more. But, we talked about Flowers from Vigor. I think he's going to be a firm commitment. And I've been asked today already about Anthony Jennings. I think Jennings will stay committed. I mean, he could have waited for an Auburn offer, but he grew up an Alabama fan. And I think, Alabama historically does not lose many commitments under Nick Saban. And
did we lose Drew?
I think Drew, his internet just died.
Okay, could be. Well, Thomas, just continuing along what Drew was saying, and I'm sure he'll Skype back in here in a second, but continuing about what he was saying, Mario Cristobal has reeled in five straight recruits that, and four of those were top 100 kids in the country. Those occurred Saturday. And then he reeled in Christian Bell today from Hoover, a school that has become an Alabama pipeline, as we know, dating back many, many moons ago when it was still Barry High School. But Cristobal is doing a phenomenal job on the recruiting trail. And I'm glad we at least had Drew on long enough to tell us about what happened Saturday, as well as recap today's guy. But I think he'll be Skyping back in here in just a second. In fact, it looks like he's trying to right now. So we'll have Drew back in a minute. And as I mentioned earlier, Drew's coworker at Alabama Intel, which is on very good terms with those of us at Scout.com and BamaMag.com, we're all buddies. He mentioned Rodney Orr, Tyler Insider. We're all friends in the business. And William Barger, who people know on the Internet as Redfish, is going to be joining us after the top of the hour. And let's see. Looks like is Drew back now?
I'm trying to get him back. I don't know what happened just now. I assume it's on his end because I believe we are still broadcasting.
No, I can hear you.
Right, right.
The chat room if they hear both of us.
Well, I'm pretty sure they do. They've been commenting pretty regularly. But
but they're not asking questions. Odd.
Well, we don't have our general question guy. RTR1 is not with us, and King of Twitter is failing us. So.
No Viking horse?
No, no VH today.
Oh, man. Hate that. But anyway, we are efforting to get Drew back on. Whatever technical difficulty is, I'm certain it'll be solved in the next couple of minutes. And when we get him back on, we'll continue to talk about the great recruiting haul that was had this past Saturday and continued today. As I told Drew a minute ago, I don't really think anybody is going to be able to catch Alabama as far as number one class this year. I think they're going to repeat. And the more 4 and 5 stars you put together, statistics have shown, the higher you finish in the rankings. Even all those years that Florida State was putting together great classes and coming up short in like the Miami game or whatever, they were always in the top 3 or 4 teams in the country. The mystery of how we lost Drew continues.
Yeah, I'm going to be tinkering with it. I just shot him a text message to try and puzzle this out. If his internet goes down, I'm just going to have him call in. It won't be as high quality, but it's it is what it is.
I thought Huntsville was supposed to be like a bunch of rocket scientists up there. Don't their internet work in Huntsville? I mean, come on.
Okay, apparently his computer just shut down, so he'll be back with us shortly.
Hey, you know that? You know what? right before that happened, I got the little battery warning on mine because I was all excited getting back on BAMS tonight that I had not plugged mine in. So I just got mine plugged in, or I would have had about 5 minutes left before that happened to me. So, hey. This time, Drew, remember to plug the thing in because batteries only last so long.
Or just use a desktop like I do, but that's just me.
Yes. Well, Thomas, I didn't ask you. I mean, what was your impression of A-Day?
Well, at first, I admit some knee-jerkism with – I was not very impressed with Blake Sims, but like you've stated, like legend stated – It was such a vanilla offense that it's hard to draw any conclusions. Do I think that Blake Sims is the truth and will lead Alabama to their 16th national championship? No. But do I think he will play as badly as he played on Saturday very often? No. So I'm still kind of lukewarm on that. Was very impressed with the defense. The metaphor I used when Legend came on is, depends on what kind of person you are. Are you a glass half full or a glass half empty kind of person? Because as bad as the Alabama offense looked for the majority of the A-Day game, the Alabama defense looked really good. So, you know, again, are you glass half full or glass half empty? I personally was very impressed with the defense. I was, you know, like I said to you, the front seven was really good. They had a good game. Mario Cristobal, he's doing great work on the recruiting trail, but I think he's got a little bit more work to do when it comes to developing an offensive line. But we'll see. You know, again, you're talking about guys, you're talking about young men, football players that are athletically as talented as any. And you're talking about position coaches that are some of the best in the business. So I think it's a pretty stacked deck, and I'm okay with that. That's kind of my impression coming out of A-Day, to be honest.
It's good. That's very, very solid. I totally agree with all that you just said. Fans, you know, you used a good word there, knee-jerk. Fans tend to do that over just the littlest thing. I mean, do they think Blake Sims is going to go out there and throw for 400 yards against our starting defense? I mean, really? No. A lot of the stats that Blake racked up all spring were against the second team. I mean,
yeah.
So, you know, they didn't do a lot of one-on-one until Saturday. Well, they did a little bit, but not much.
Something that I want to kind of go with the knee-jerkism, and I want to extend the metaphor a little bit more. I was brought up earlier in the show during Legends segment that fans got spoiled by the 2012 offensive line, Barrett Jones, Wormack, Fluker, and how good they were. And I just kind of want to continue to paint the picture of how good two of those three guys are. CBS recently ran a real interesting NFL segment, and it's definitely the dog days before the draft for the CBS football staff, NFL staff, where they did the top under 25, underage 25 players versus the top over 30 players. Guess who were starters at right tackle and left guard? Fluker and Warmack.
Oh, wow.
They're considered that good to be among the best young offensive linemen in the NFL. So I guess my thing to fans, and something I will say to myself, I am not immune to this. Like I said, I knee-jerked a little after A-Day. When you try and compare the current offensive line to that one, it's kind of a little bit of perspective to realize not only were these guys elite-level talents at Alabama, they're elite-level talents at the highest levels of football. So, you know, try not to jump all over folks, I guess would be my advice, if I'm allowed to proselytize briefly.
You are. It's welcomed. It's good to hear. What was your distinct impression of the kicking game?
Oh, gosh. I tweeted this, and I think it's the absolute truth. I don't know where Adam Griffith's head is, but it is full of snakes. I think I could stomach one of the multitude of misses that we saw at A-Day. You know, jitters, you've got it's a new job, you know, you haven't really done it before, you're still young. I can buy those excuses for an A-Day game. But those excuses fall to the wayside when you miss more than you make. And then punting, there was a 15-yard punt, and then there were a few decent ones. Does that mean that I want Morris punting? Probably not. But if everyone else, if their ACL spontaneously exploded on the sideline and Alec Morris was the only punter that Alabama had, I'm not going to flip out about it. It's not like he's going to kick it backwards. So,
I don't think he's going to be the punter against West Virginia.
I agree. I'm just saying from what we saw that in terms of punting, I could live with it if I had to. I don't want to, but I could. But the rest is a big question mark to me. But continuing our conversation about recruiting, Drew has restarted his computer and he has rejoined us. So, Drew, welcome back.
Hey, Drew.
Hey, guys, sorry about that. A little bit of a technical difficulty. Thought the computer was asleep. It was off.
Huntsville's the rocket city, but they ain't got a lot of rocket scientists.
There you go. I'm not a computer wizard, so had to reboot right there. So, but as I was saying, man, it looks like it's going to be another, you know, great class for the Tide. I think the number one class in the country easily again. Could very easily happen. And, you know, I was just going over some of the comments Christian Bell made tonight, and you know, I think it's an exciting time. I just think the kid is going to be easily a 4-star before it's over with. He's a 3 by most of the services right now, but I think he'll easily be a top 10 in-state guy and a guy probably in the top 50 to 60 prospects nationally.
Drew, what time is Redfish going to call in tonight?
We're going to have him after. He said he was going to call in about 9 o'clock, so hopefully we'll have him at 9 or a little after. He's going to come in and give his insight into the A-Day game and some of the recruiting also that's happened, some of the commitments. But I know he likes Christian Bell a lot as well. But, again, he'll give us a lot of keen insight into that dynamic of the team right now.
Yep, looking forward to having him. He'll be a first time and hopefully not last time guest on BAMS Radio. I think our listeners are going to really be in for a treat. Not that they're not in for one. With having Drew on here, but William gives us even another aspect. A guy who's an ex-player at Alabama, and a guy who's considered one of the top talent evaluators in the industry. So
yeah, absolutely.
We're thrilled to have him coming on in the next couple of minutes.
I'm keeping a weather eye out. I had a quick question, and this is kind of. I realize this question's almost not fair. Obviously, last year, Alabama's recruiting class was historically amazing in terms of, you know, star counts and averages, yada, yada, yada. Just kind of extrapolating what you've said, Drew, how does this class, which you also believe will be a number one class, how do you think the two are going to stack up?
As far as the like this past year and this one?
Right.
Well, that's tough because you got 10 spots left, Thomas, but, you know, unbelievably, you know, it should – it go the way Alabama wants it to go, I think it would have matched up very favorably. And then I hate to do this because it depresses me when I think about it, but what if Ricky Town had stayed committed?
Oh, man, that's true.
I mean, I think Town was as good a quarterback prospect as I've ever seen on tape. Flawless mechanics, size, arm strength, touch, intelligence, the whole shooting match. And so now I do like Zach Gentry a lot on film. Big kid, good mobility, looks like he's got nice arm strength. But, again, Town was so polished, and that's kind of what set it apart. But if you get a big-time quarterback commitment, say you can pull Zach Gentry, you add Jovan Durante, which could almost finish off the wide receiver class. The key is going to be, Thomas, can you get a couple of offensive tackles? Because I think there's a dearth of OTs in the Southeast this year. There's not a lot of them. They're hard to find. They're kind of like a Sasquatch. So it's going to be the OLBL camp in mid-June for Alabama is going to be very interesting because I think they've got three really good interior prospects committed. And I still like Brandon Kennedy from Wetumpka a lot as well. Hopefully he will be coming to Alabama's OLBL camp. But I think, honestly, what the key is going to be, big-time QB and then two offensive tackles and then filled in. And then I think they'll be filled in with seven or eight really big-time prospects. But those are the two key areas now besides adding at least two to three more quality defensive backs. But I think, again, two offensive tackles and the quarterback position are the key spots now.
It's 9 o'clock right now, and we're waiting on William Barger to call. But while we're waiting, one of our regulars, one of our most loyal callers is with us now, Drew. Marty, what is going on tonight, brother?
Hey, it's just a wonderful day here in Gadsden, Alabama, I'm telling you. Beautiful weather. Hey, Drew or Kerry or Rocky, the one, what's the deal with Bo Scarborough? I've heard he had a decent act score and is looking pretty promising. Is this true?
Well, I'll comment and then Kerry can. But, you know, as far as Bo Scarborough, from what I understand from this past weekend, he's still, you know, got to finish up this semester, got to continue to do well. And then it's looking like, you know, regardless, that he's going to have to take two to three summer classes and do very well in those courses to qualify. I think there's still optimism that he will make it, but it's still a kind of a road to hoe. And if he makes, you know, if he does exceptionally well in these three classes, and then they should be online classes, it may not matter that he needs to improve his score. But if he's improved his score, it will help even more. At one point in time, I know this semester he needed to, you know, make two more points on the ACT. Have not heard, you know, what if he's been able to do that for sure or not. But the one key thing, Marty, is that he will not have to pass the graduation exam. He was grandfathered in. It was waived for this year's senior class, so he will not have to pass that. And I think that's one of the big reasons why he left Florida and came back to Alabama. But I think that, you know, the compliance department in Alabama is still, you know, optimistic that he's going to make it. And he will be an ultimate weapon if he can make it to Alabama. He's a guy that's very versatile, can play wide receiver, H-back, and running back. And he will be interesting. It will be interesting to see what Lane Kiffin does with the young man if he can get in school.
Well, the rumor I've heard, he made a 28 on his act test.
Yeah, if he made a 28, that's great. But I don't want to rain on folks' parades. But if he made a 28 on his act test, that's probably going to be flagged.
You know what? Speaking of ACT tests, we're going to bring on our next guest now. Marty, you can stay with us if you like. We're bringing on William Redfish Barger, who played with a guy who had a big jump in ACT score, and I'm not convinced to this day, William, that David Palmer took that ACT. William Barger, welcome to BAMS Radio. What's going on, buddy?
I'm pleading the fifth on any kind of test shenanigans that y'all are talking about. I know nothing about that.
Fair enough. Because nice. We know that nobody would ever have a 30-year-old man walk in and take their ACT for them. Wouldn't happen.
You know, one of the greatest, and he's actually still in Tuscaloosa, one of the greatest qualifying stories, I think, in the history of Alabama football was with the backup nose guard, Darren Lake, that's actually on the team right now recovering from a torn pectoral muscle. Going into his first crack at the ACT, Darren had a 1.6 GPA, which tends to lead one to believe that he's got little to no shot of qualifying. And right out of the gate, first test score comes back, and he makes 26 and passes and qualifies with flying colors. So, yeah, maybe Darren's been giving Bo Scarborough some test-taking pointers, or at least I hope he has.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us tonight on BAMS. We hope this will not be the last time, but I'm glad that you were able to work us into your schedule. And for those that don't know, William Barger was a member of the 92 National Championship team, was a freshman All-ACC player at Alabama, played for Gene Stallings, who, if he was with us now, William, would say something like, "Brother Bill, you about the biggest bullshit I've ever mown." But he's not.
Man, did y'all have his office bugged during one of my hundreds of meetings with him in the same class?
No, that actually came out, William, in one of those lunches we used to have at your restaurant back in the day. You told us that story.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that threw you for a little bit of a loop. But listen, William, as a guy who evaluates players for a business, has played in the SEC, knows what it's like down in the trenches at places like Bryant-Denny or Vaught Hemingway or Jordan-Hare. Tell us a little bit about what you saw Saturday from Alabama on both sides of the ball.
Well, guys, I mean, I've got a different outlook on it, I guess, than most people do, because the coaching staff, you know, grades spring practice on a whole body of work, not just the A-day performance. You know, I saw a lot of positive things, you know, in the scrimmages leading up to the 8A game that you didn't get to see. You know, that being said, you asked the question, so I'll tell you what I thought. You know, going into spring practice, I identified, you know, a couple of different areas of concern. You know, I thought some of those areas got better. Some of them actually got worse. You know, the first one that I thought, you know, had to be answered was you know, the quarterback position. And, you know, I saw Blake Sims look like a pretty good starting SEC quarterback in the two scrimmages leading up to the 8A game. Certainly took a step backwards last Saturday. You know, the other position that I thought Alabama had some questions to answer, you know, in 30 days was at the cornerback spot. You know, losing Eddie Jackson was a huge blow. I think Bradley Silve kind of solidified himself at one corner spot. You didn't really get to see, you know, the full body of work out of Tony Brown because he was limited with that shoulder injury. But I thought he did real well for himself Saturday, recovered from, you know, giving up a big play early on to Robert Foster and came back with a couple of pass breakups and an interception. So, you know, I think with Brown, you know, showing that he's SEC ready, you know, maybe Marlon Humphrey comes in over the summer and then solidifies that other spot. But, you know, when Tony Brown wasn't available and Eddie Jackson was hurt, that other corner spot was a pretty big eyesore, you know, in the scrimmages. You know, the third position that I thought Alabama, you know, not necessarily from a lack of talent, but a lack of depth, was the inside linebacker spot. You know, you only really had one proven commodity coming back into the spring and Trey DePriest. I thought Reggie Ragland did a pretty good job of taking that other position. Didn't really get a lot of opposition. Reuben Foster basically missed most of spring practice with stinger and concussion issues. You know, the true freshman, Sean Dion Hamilton, I think, showed that he's ready to contribute at some point this fall. But it's still, until that, you know, next wave of enrollees gets there at the end of May, it's still, you know, a pretty scary depth situation there with, you know, Reuben kind of being a question mark. You've only got 3 to 4 scholarship players to fill 2 spots. You know, and the other 2 positions that I thought, you know, needed to be answered was the offensive line. I'm not sure if I've ever seen an early enrollee, true freshman player come as far and as fast as Cameron Robinson did from the first day of practice to what you saw Saturday in the A-Day game. You know, I think, you know, Mario Cristobal did a very good job this spring of mixing and matching different combinations to try and find the best 5 on campus at this time. You know, with an elite junior college player like Dominic Jackson coming this summer, I still think he's probably going to factor in. somewhere along the starting five. Right now it looks like it's going to be at one of the two guard spots. But with all the mixing and matching that Coach Cristobal did, I think guys like Grant Hill, Brandon Green, you know, even Leon Brown showed that they're capable of playing multiple positions, which certainly helps, you know, the depth situation there. I thought the offensive line got better, you know, as the spring concluded Saturday. And I still think, you know, you don't look out there and just see a Chance Wormack, a DJ Fluke, or a Barrett Jones. So I think the goal right now is to try and get this offensive line to perform at the level that it did last year, and I think that's probably achievable. And in the last spot, which went backwards, in my opinion, from the first day of spring until A-Day, was the kicking game, the special teams. You know, you've got a third- to fourth-team quarterback back there, and Alec Morris trying to, you know, fill the job of the punter. I don't know what's happened to Adam Griffin over the winter, but he went completely backwards from day one. So that is a huge area of concern. You know, when the special teams are that shaky, going into a season where, at least in my opinion, I don't necessarily see a championship-caliber football team that can just line up and run over you at will, and maybe even have some issues on the back end of the defense and the secondary. So in a year where Alabama may need a championship caliber special teams unit, I don't know if that's going to be available or not.
Well, now, William, you also were able to see the second close scrimmage. Drew and I saw the first one, and we broke the first one down in depth a couple weeks ago. You were able to see the second scrimmage, during which, obviously, you saw way more of Lane Kiffin's offense than anybody saw this past Saturday. So what did you see specifically offensively in that second close scrimmage that encouraged you, and anything that discouraged you?
It really wasn't any more than what you guys saw on the first one or what you saw Saturday. You know, the second scrimmage was, you know, the tail end of the coaching clinic, and there were, you know, 500 high school coaches from around the country there, and they played things pretty close to the vest with play calling at that one. I mean, I guess, you know, what people didn't get to see that I saw in that one, you know, I saw Blake Sims look like a pretty composed and comfortable SEC quarterback. He made a lot of good passes, moved the chains. He didn't have the eye-popping, you know, 3-40-yard passes that you saw, you know, in the first one, but he made a lot of 15- to 20-yard passes to move the chains. Chris Black didn't have the dropsies that you saw Saturday. He had a big day. You know, our Darius Stewart had a 70-yard bomb from Alec Morris in that scrimmage. You know, offensively, they didn't really even try and run the football that much. It was more of a, you know, let's see what we can do with the passing game, and they were pretty successful at it. You know, and really the same people that you saw Saturday on the other side of the ball were the ones that stood out in that scrimmage as well. I mean, DJ Petway and Tim Williams were getting after the quarterback. Reggie Ragland showed that he's gotten better at being athletic in space and not just being a, you know, between the tackles type inside linebacker like Trey DePriest is. So it wasn't really a whole lot different than what you guys saw on the first one and what you saw Saturday at 8. You know, the only thing that I was expecting to see this spring that never seemed to materialize was, you know, the O.J. Howard factor in the passing game. There never seemed to be a, you know, a concerted effort to try and get the ball to him any more than what you saw him get last year. I'm hoping that changes by the West Virginia game.
Oh, Lord, no doubt, William. If that doesn't change, I'll be stunned. I'm hoping it's just a fact that they didn't want to show a whole lot, because I think O.J. should be an ultimate weapon. But I was also very encouraged by what I saw in the scrimmages, and I know you saw him as well. I thought he had a nice day. I thought Robert Foster showcased excellent body control and hands and good size. I think, you know, DeAndre White will obviously be back out there in the fall, and obviously Christian Jones has got the trust of the coaches, but Robert Foster to me is a guy that could come on and have a nice year and has a skill set to help Alabama in their top 4 to 5 receivers.
Well, and I agree, Drew, and I think that's why it's so critical for them to get, you know, consistent offensive line play and get some type of consistent quarterback play. You know, for Lane Kiffin's pro-style offense to go in the air, it's got to be successful on the ground for all the play-action passes, you know, in the waggle stuff that he does from that end. And it's not just the front line guys. I think, you know, Alabama's probably got the deepest and the most talented, you know, set of running backs and set of wide receivers that, you know, at least in the 25 years that I've been keeping up with Alabama football, deepest and most talented two skill position sets I've seen in Tuscaloosa. I mean, the back end guys at wide receiver for Alabama, like you mentioned, Robert Faulkner, Cameron Sims, Raheem Falkins, Ardarius Stewart, you know, those are all going to be second-tier players probably. And I can remember a lot of years where Alabama wished they could trot four wide receivers out there that was good as those guys.
Oh, I know. There's no question. I've never seen the depth. I mean, Ardarius, he made a couple of plays, like when he tipped the ball to himself during the A-Day game. That was the ball went through his hands, but his concentration, he still kept his concentration and caught the football and made a play. And then on the deep ball, made a nice adjustment to Cooper Bateman. And I really thought Cooper Bateman made a lot of strides. I mean, he was really not very good at all when he reported last January. But in the year's time, I think he settled down. I liked his poise. He was much more accurate. Still has some improving to do, but I think now, I think he's definitely passed Alec Morris and McLeod. I think those are the two guys that will likely leave the program. But I think Bateman and Cornwell will fight it out to replace, you know, Coker and or, you know, Blake Sims will be in the competition as well. But then the quarterback of the future will be Bateman, between Bateman and Cornwell.
Yeah, and I would put Bateman in the same category that I did with Cameron Robinson. I mean, it wasn't as far back as January. It was as far back as the middle of March where he did not look like he was anywhere near ready to become a second team, possibly SEC quarterback, and he came a long way in a short period of time as well.
No doubt, no doubt. Agreed.
William, I'm going to ask you this question. As a former offensive lineman and as a guy that watches the offensive linemen, Drew and I both heard Coach Saban tell all in the room that Grant Hill was one of the five best offensive linemen on the team, yet we don't ever see him run with the ones. How do you see him fitting in this fall?
Well, you know, and that's you brought up something that's kind of perplexed me, you know, since the opening of spring practice. You know, I really thought, based on his performance in the latter part of last season, that Ari Quanjo would have been one of the guys that you saw them place another player behind to push and possibly take over his position in the spring. And from day one, I never saw another player in any practice rotate in with the ones at left guard. It was Ari Quanjo from the get-go to the finish. And the same thing about Grant Hill. You know, if he's one of the five best offensive linemen, they certainly didn't give him an opportunity to prove it with the first-team offense. I mean, he, you know, rotated in at right tackle. He played some center. I saw him at right guard some, but it was 90% with reps taken with the second-team offense. So maybe Coach Saban's playing a card that he's still holding inside his back pocket on Grant Hill, but I did not see the indicators that you would expect if he's actually considered one of the top five.
Yeah, I would agree there. It surprised me. I thought he looked pretty good at backup center, and ultimately center may be where he ends up. I mean, Ryan Kelly's obviously got 2 years left, but you would hope if Grant Hill's not a lock for the top five, especially with Dom Jackson reporting in late May, early June, you would hope Grant Hill could redshirt and preserve a year of eligibility if those other guys can stay healthy. But, again, they're kind of, I think, preparing Grant and Leon Brown to be swing types, and then we'll see how good Dom really is. But, of course, his film is really good. But, again, he has to get there in the fall and prove it, and he'll have about 3 months to do so. So it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, I think Dom will get a look at both the guard spots. I felt like I was surprised that Ari Quanjo wasn't on the clock as well. I thought he performed okay in the spring, but it's going to be interesting to see if they have anybody pushing him in the fall, because I do think Dominic Jackson has the ability to do that, and I still think Grant Hill has a higher ceiling than Ari.
No, absolutely, and that was a frustrating thing for me to watch, especially. You know, it sometimes takes offensive linemen, you know, 2 or 3 years in the program, before they start to factor in. And, you know, the two guys that the staff you know, burnt the red shirt years last year with, you know, one being Grant Hill, the other one D Line. I really didn't understand either one of those moves if they weren't going to play more than they did.
I totally agree.
Well, let's turn the talk now to recruiting. Drew and I talked about this briefly earlier, William, but have you ever seen a team come out of a spring game with as many epic commitments as Alabama did Saturday night?
No, I never have. I mean, there's been some National Signing Day, you know, flurry finishes in the past by other programs where I've seen, you know, them get that kind of talent on National Signing Day, but, you know, not coming out of a spring practice scrimmage like that. And to be quite honest with you, you know, some of the guys that they got are, you know, phenomenal players. I spent some time this morning watching some film on Minka Fitzpatrick, the five-star cornerback from New Jersey. And, you know, anytime I see a kid outside of the Southeast that's coming to the Southeastern Conference to play, I'm always a little bit hesitant to, you know, throw accolades their way because I just don't think the high school competition's at the same level that people see in, you know, states like Florida and Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana. But, you know, I watched some stuff on him this morning where he was competing in some national combines and, you know, he was dominating, you know, elite-level wide receivers from different parts of the country for a rising senior in high school. He's very physically advanced for his age. You know, he kind of reminds me a lot of, you know, Tony Brown from the standpoint that, you know, he's physically ready to play now. It's just a matter of how quickly he can absorb the Nick Saban playbook that, you know, is the size of the Metro Atlanta Yellow Pages. You know, the other one that I thought, it kind of caught me by surprise because it looked like he had kind of gone cold on Alabama, you know, since the first junior day. But Leo Lewis, the linebacker from Mississippi, who really reminds me of the former Tennessee linebacker from about 10 years ago, Al Wilson, you know, runs well, plays well in space. When he arrives on the scene to make a tackle, he gets there and he's violent. He puts people on the ground, very athletic for a 6'2", 230-pound kid. You know, the two kids from Florida, you know, Sean Burgess Becker reminds me of, you know, Hassan Clinton Dix, part two. Could probably play both sides of the ball, you know, wide receiver or safety. But I think Alabama's kind of got it tagged to be a free safety in their scheme. And, you know, Calvin Ridley, there again, he's got some pretty serious qualifying concerns. But if there's a better wide receiver in the country for the 2015 class, I've yet to see it. So, you know, they're sitting now with 15 commitments, you know, in a year where they probably can't afford to sign more than 24 or 25 kids based on the size of the senior class. And, you know, you might see, you know, three or four early defections, you know, from the junior class that'll help that, you know, overall 85 number. But, you know, there's still a lot of areas of positions of need, you know, in this class, and you're only looking at 9 or 10 spots left that they can fill them in. So it'll be real interesting to see how they manage that, you know, going forward towards National Signing Day.
And William, I know you can comment on this more, but it's your specialty really with how you evaluate, but I think this year, I think it's obvious that they're going to have to dig to find some offensive tackles.
Well, you know, it's actually not a bad year for offensive tackles nationally. I mean, there's you know, typically in a good offensive tackle class, there's 5 to 7, you know, legit guys in the country that, you know, you could kind of put in the same category as a Cameron Robinson or a Osiris Kwanjo or an Andre Smith, you know, guys that kind of possibly have an opportunity to play from day one out of the gate. But, you know, all of those guys never really seem to be that attracted or interested in Alabama. You know, I kind of think maybe the coaching staff made a mistake by not pursuing Jake Freemorgan a little bit harder. He's a kid that I think, you know, could be an Austin Shepherd type player 2 or 3 years down the road with a couple of years in a strength and conditioning program. And, you know, that's something that I hope the coaching staff maybe changes directions on in their recruiting philosophy going forward is, you know, for every Cyrus Kwanjo and Cameron Robinson, there's a next tier down of guys that can be developed and, you know, turned into solid players, you know, their sophomore, junior years. And, you know, if you miss on the Cameron Robinsons and the Cyrus Quandos and you don't pay the proper attention to, you know, the Jake Threemorgans of the world, then you end up losing them to other schools because they feel spurned. But, yeah, I think, you know, it's, you know, condition critical basically at this point. When you look out there at the depth, at the offensive tackle spots, you know, they lose Austin Shepard after this season. So, you know, they're going to be in the need once again, you know, after this season going into next year's spring practice, you know, to bring the next group of guys along that can play. And I think they really need to try and bring, you know, at least two quality offensive tackles in and make them a part of the last 10 spots that are available in this class.
No doubt. I agree there 100%.
William, how do you see in the current recruiting cycle between with only 10 spots left, how do you see the running back position shaping up in the 2015 class for Alabama?
Well, I think basically based on campus, and I think this spring, you know, kind of an eye-opening, you know, experience for me, you know, you've got, you know, a couple of guys in LT Tenpenny and Tyron Jones that could probably start for most other SEC schools this year. I mean, they're both very talented. You know, Tenpenny's a bull in a china shop. I mean, he'd rather run through you than run around you. Tyron Jones kind of reminds me of Darren Sproles a little bit. I mean, he's quick as a hiccup and runs behind his pads with authority. So I don't think that the running back position in this class is actually very critical. They've already got one committed from down in Mobile from Biger High School into Sherry Flowers. You know, they're going to continue to recruit the number one JUCO running back in the country, Javon Robinson, until he signs on the dotted line with another school. I just don't think it's a position of needs, you know, when you start looking at, you know, the needs at the cornerback spot, you know, needing to sign at least one, possibly two legitimate inline tight end. You know, we've already touched on the offensive tackles. You know, they need to get a couple more Leo Lewis types at linebacker. So there's a lot of needs left on this football program and not a lot of space left to use them on.
My concern, I guess, William, with the running back position is that both of the young men that you just named, as well as Kenyon Drake, are sort of on thin ice right now with the head coach.
Well, you know, being on thin ice and you know, having to go in front of the leadership council to determine your fate, whether you're going to be allowed to come back with the program, you know, is a little bit different. I mean, the drug possession arrest for Tenpenny was really his first brush with being in the doghouse. Really the only one that's on thin ice, literally, is Kenyon Drake. And, you know, he's a guy that's so talented. He's going to get the benefit of the doubt unless he really, really screws up. And, you know, and I think the other thing that the coaching staff has got to kind of take a wait-and-see approach on whether or not they try and bring in another running back in this class, which I talked about when I came on, is whether or not Bo Scarborough qualifies. If he doesn't qualify, then all of a sudden it kind of changes the landscape a little bit at the running back position. If he does, then I think there's a lot of other needs at other places. You know, the prevailing opinion is that, you know, come January, both Drake and Yeldon are going to declare for the draft. So, you know, they're going to have to try and keep some guys on ice, you know, to see if Bo Scarborough qualifies, see what Javon Robinson's final decision is before I think they go in another direction with some other backs.
Agreed. Marty, you still with us?
I am.
You got any questions for William?
I do. I really do. One question I have, switching off of football and into basketball, what's the deal with Nick Jacobs?
Well, I'll take the basketball question. Marty, from what I understand, Nick Jacobs is working out with the team in the off-season program.
he's still considered suspended in that regard, but I think he's working his way back. I think you would have already heard of a transfer if that was going to happen. I think it's going to be a long road to hoe, but I think they're going to bring him back next season for his senior year. Obviously, there's another major announcement tonight. I didn't know if Kerry had talked about this before I came on, but
about
Jackson Davis. His mother announcing down to three. They have eliminated Vanderbilt, eliminated Creighton, eliminated Arizona State. It's Alabama, Butler, and Bryce. To me, it's Alabama or Butler. Right. Alabama got the last visit. And now they're saying by the end of this week, you're cautiously optimistic considering how good I heard the visit was at Alabama. And I try to read into comments. When I read his mother's comments on all three schools, it's kind of like when I interviewed Kerryon Johnson the night before he was going to – or the day before he was going to announce between Alabama, Florida State, and Auburn. And as soon as I left the school, I knew it was Auburn. And from reading between the lines with his mother, I think Alabama's in really good shape with Jackson Davis. I think it's a good sign that you cancel two other officials after Alabama's visit, but we will see, Marty. But I think Nick will come back, and if Jackson Davis can become the last piece of the puzzle, there is absolutely no excuse for Alabama not going to the NCAA tournament and doing some damage next year. And if they don't, new coach in Tuscaloosa, but I've said that many, many times.
Hey, Redfish, it's an honor to be able to talk to you tonight. I've heard a lot about you and through the chat rooms and stuff. You know, it's good to have you on tonight. Question for you, Redfish. What is the latest on Tyler Carr from Southside High School?
I think that Tyler Carr is right now, Auburn is his leader. And I think it's probably been that way from day one. I think he's done a really good job for himself going out and exploring all his options. And to be quite honest with you, when I look at recruiting, I look at both sides of the stick from a need standpoint. You know, with Alabama signing, or not signing, but they've already got, you know, Dallas Warmack, Lester Cotton, Richie Pettibone. You know, Warmack's pretty much impact as an interior player. I think Cotton and Pettibone, you know, both have the feet and the length to play multiple positions if need be. But, you know, Alabama's actually in a pretty good situation, you know, depth-wise in the interior part of the offensive line. And I don't think that Tyler Carr is athletic enough to be an edge-type player at offensive tackle. I don't think he's got the feet. And, you know, I just don't know if that's a great fit for Alabama, especially now when you start looking at the limited number of spaces that are left. But, you know, Carr's going to continue to visit other places. He's set to, you know, make his final decision in October, and I expect him to go to Auburn.
I agree with you there. Go ahead, Marty.
I do too. I know his dad's a big Auburn fan and all that, but, you know, being in the Gadsden region, you hear a lot about Tyler Carr, and you kind of hope that maybe he'll lean towards Alabama and just disappoint Auburn a little bit, but that's no big deal. One thing, for fun, though, the SEC Network commercial, Take It All In. You know, I was pretty impressed with Alabama's commercial. I had to laugh. I'm sorry. I just had to laugh at the Auburn commercial. It was hysterical. What do y'all guys think?
I was pretty proud because one of my coworkers' daughter is Chandler Champion, who's an Alabama student, and Miss Alabama, not university, Miss Alabama, as in the state. And she got a good little segment of that commercial wearing her houndstooth. Ours was certainly classier than theirs. Theirs was kind of a joke. I'm only sad that they showed the trees and not the wires with the toilet paper on them.
I'm going to be honest. I watched Alabama's. I liked it a lot, Kerry, but I did not watch the school down the road. I did not see the commercial. I guess I'll see it at some point, but I have not had the pleasure. But I thought Alabama's was extremely well done.
One last point, guys. Before I get off. My looking at A-Day this weekend, You know, one thing that I did come away with that I really wasn't impressed, I was impressed with, was the D-line. I think we're very deep at the D-line for the first time in a long time, because I think we got some guys out there that, whether the first team or second team or whatever, they can get after the quarterback. For the first time since Saban has been there as a coach, in my opinion, this is one of the best D-lines I've seen him put on the field. And I really think that's going to help the cornerbacks and the safeties this year, because I think these guys are hungry. You know, I think they're going after them.
No, I would totally agree with you. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just going to say it real quick. I agree, Marty. I think there are almost three deep. I think Jaron Reed is the real deal, whether he ends up shifting inside a nose or an end. Jesse Williams played each position, you know, end as a junior and nose as a senior. I think he's going to be a dominant force wherever they put him. I think DJ Pentway, everybody saw in the 8A game, and as William has already mentioned, in the scrimmages, he was coming off the edge. He's bigger now. The game has slowed down for him. He looks really, really good. And then John Allen, he was tremendous in the scrimmage. And I'm telling you guys, he's been running with the threes. He has been injured, overcoming an injury, but he had been with the threes some in practice. So that just shows the depth there. And, you know, you got guys like Dalvin Tomlinson who's recovering. I think he will be a good player for Alabama. Then Darren Lake will be back from the torn pec to help at the nose spot. But I just think right now they're very, very deep. Bashawn Robinson is a grown man. I think that they can go 2 to 3 deep, and there won't be a lot of drop-off from a production standpoint.
Yeah, and Marty, some guys that you know haven't been mentioned that really kind of turned the corner this spring that are going to be, you know, kind of second-tier players in a backup role, but I think they'll play a lot. You know, two guys that really stood out to me, you know, in practices were D-liner and Corin Kervin, both that have gotten better this spring. And, you know, I think there's two guys coming to campus at the end of May, and Deshaun Hand and Josh Frazier that could probably factor in, you know, early if need be. I mean, it might be the depth situation. Maybe they finally have the luxury of redshirt and those two guys, but I think both of them are SEC ready to play. And you know, I think one of the best hires that I've seen Nick Saban make since he's been here, and even though he's got the title of, you know, director of player personnel, video director, whatever his title is, but bringing Tosh LePoy in from Washington has got a lot more to do with the defensive line, in my opinion, than recruiting. You know, he's not allowed to go off campus and recruit anyway, so that's not going to be a huge factor. But he's a lot better of a defensive line coach from a technician and a technique standpoint than a lot of people give him credit for. He made himself feel welcome with the players and kind of earned their trust in a short period of time. Spends a lot of time, you know, in the complex, watching film with them, showing them stuff that they can improve on. And I think he's going to be a very, very big addition to the coaching staff going forward, especially when it comes to, you know, having an extra set of eyes there to help with the defensive line.
And I don't think there's any doubt. I agree with William 100%. I could do nothing but smile when that broke and it was announced that he was coming to Alabama. He did a great job at Cal and then Washington, a great recruiter, you know, the really good defensive line coach. Obviously, Bo Davis, I think, is going to be do a solid job there. But, you know, you would not be surprised if Tosh LePoy ends up with an on-field position, because as we've seen, Nick Saban's staff, very rarely, it has never come back intact on a year-to-year basis. If there is a defection on the defensive side of the football, LePoy is a guy that's, you know, coached the defensive line, but you could see him, you know, moving into a spot on Alabama's, you know, defensive staff, no doubt. And he's a guy that's just, I think he is going to have a big impact, and I think he was a shrewd, shrewd hire by Nick Saban.
Hey, Drew, does your dog have any questions for William?
Do you what now?
Does your dog have any questions for William?
No, we're good.
All right.
Hey,
Marty,
I'm going to get off here. Redfish, I appreciate you coming on tonight, man. I love what you bring to BAMS Radio, and we really appreciate it. And I'm going to get off here and say a big roll tide for everybody.
Thank you, Marty.
All right, Marty, I appreciate it, man.
tell you what a good guy Marty is. I had a period of time last year when I was out of work, and he sent me an email and asked for my address, and I went to the mailbox, and there's like a $50 gift card for Top of the River because he knows I love to eat there in Gadsden. And I was like, yes, Marty, my hero. So that's just the kind of guy he is. Great guy.
Great guy.
Yeah. Oh, so anyway, back to football. William, in the scrimmage that you were at that Drew and I were not at, we had a high school coach on last week that was there, and talking a little bit more about the defensive line position, he had a lot of good things to say about Dakota Ball.
Yeah, I probably should have mentioned him in the same breath with D-liner and Corin Curvin. You know, I think he actually is 100% healthy for the first time since he's been in Tuscaloosa. Saw a little bit of Nick Gentry in him, I guess would be a good comparison. I mean, he's an undersized guy. You know, you certainly don't look out there and, you know, think that he's the big, imposing, you know, physical specimen that A'shaun Robinson is, but he's got a pretty quick first step. He's able to torque his body and get, you know, get it in awkward angles and recover quickly. And I think he's probably going to play, you know, quite a few minutes this fall. I don't expect him to be one of the first six or seven guys, but he's going to play quite a bit this year. And I think, you know, has a chance to have that, you know, possibly have a nice career down the road at Alabama.
I would agree with William there. I just keep imagining, you know, you put him in the late third quarter when the other team's offensive line is tired, they don't want to deal with it, and then you put a guy like Ball, the second and third effort guy in, it's, you know, hard to block, and a guy that's very shifty and very crafty, much like Nick Gentry was, and I think, you know, he could definitely find a role. I mean, he had the foot injury last year. He's had some issues with the injury since he got down there, but he's finally healthy. He's a redshirt sophomore, and like William said, some of these kids take 2 to 3 years to contribute, and I think Dakota Ball has still got a chance to factor in, especially as a second half pass rusher. You know, a guy that, again, you know, you put in there when it's obvious that the other offense is getting tired and on the verge of quitting, and then you put a guy like Dakota Ball in there, and he can definitely factor as a pass rusher.
And, you know, guys, y'all may have talked about him before I got on tonight, but, you know, the one guy that I will say that you saw, you know, show out on Saturday, and he was probably even more impressive than the other scrimmages, and he ought to just go around a billboard, you know, on McFarland Boulevard that says, you know, hey, Nick, what do I have to do? What else do I have to do to get on the field? Is Tim Williams. He's easily the best pass rusher on campus. I can remember he first caught my eye last year as a true freshman in the first scrimmage of the summer, and I never pay attention to, you know, as y'all saw in the A-Day game, that the coverage teams on kicks and punts aren't even full speed, but, you know, I kept seeing the same guy, you know, 4 and 5 yards ahead of the rest of the kick coverage team, and I'm like, who is this? And lo and behold, it was Tim Williams, and I was like, man, this guy can run. And, you know, then I can't remember what game it was, but, you know, Matt Millen was broadcasting one of the Alabama games last fall, and, you know, they were talking about the lack of pass rush that Alabama was generating at that time. And, you know, the play-by-play guy, Millen, you know, did you see anybody that stood out to you in practice this week? And he said, yeah. You know, Alabama's best pass rusher is number 56, and he's on the scout team. So I don't really know what else the young man has to do to prove to the coaches that he deserves an opportunity, you know, on third and long situations to go out there. Cause the stuff that I saw him do, you know, it wasn't the quarterback back there running around for 4 and 5 seconds buying time and, you know, he two-hand touched them. It was blowing past offensive linemen and snapped the ball before they got a chance to get out of their stance. So he's certainly one to, you know, put down in your books to keep an eye on going forward. I think he's got an opportunity to be a very special player while he's in Tuscaloosa.
And I totally agree there. And Kerry and I have talked about him every week. And I thought he was tremendous in the A-Day game. I thought he could have been MVP, lineman MVP easily. But I think he's got to be on the field, especially on third down come the fall. He has to be a factor of the pass rusher, no doubt.
William, today, one of the top players in the state of Alabama Shades Valley nose guard Deron Payne found out he's been invited to the prestigious opening, which you pretty much have to be a five-star to get invited to that. Tell us what you think about him as a player and also what Alabama's chances are for Deron Payne, William.
Oh, I think it's obvious that Alabama's the clear-cut leader for Deron, and I think they have been since, you know, last summer. He's a guy that he's so much more physically advanced than what he sees on Friday nights. If you start looking at his film in high school, you don't really see a lot of, you know, game-changing five-star type play or production out of him. But a byproduct of that is he plays in a system that's pretty similar to what Nick Saban asked for his defensive lineman, and that's to hold the point of attack and fill running lanes and let the linebackers, you know, clean things up and make the tackles. But, you know, he's a kid. He's 16 years old. On his 16th birthday a couple months ago, he got a buddy of his to videotape him, you know, bench pressing 225, 25 times. Not that, you know, being a world-class bench presser equates to being a world-class football player, but, you know, he's a guy. He's very big. He's very powerful. He'll probably stand to drop 15 or 20 pounds to improve his lateral quickness and his first step explosion. But certainly a guy that's got a ton of upside, can play more to the post guard. And, I think Alabama's his clear leader. And it's going to be fun to watch, you know, him take that next step, hopefully, and start being more productive and disruptive this year as a senior at Shades Valley.
I was at one of his games last year, William. As you know, I go out and watch kids on Friday nights, and they were playing Hewitt Trustful. And Deron hadn't had a spectacular game. He'd had kind of a solid game. Then around the beginning of the fourth quarter, he breaks through the line of scrimmage, and I'm not going to call it a suplex, but he picked up the Shades Valley running back on about the hash mark, and he walked him over to the sidelines, and he gently deposited him on the ground on the side. I'm like, whoa, who is this kid? He's a freak, William. He is.
Yeah, and, you know, what you just described is exactly the kind of player that he is. And, you know, if you start talking about some of the things that you know, the positives and the negatives with him right now as a player, you know, the explosion and being powerful is the last thing in the world that he needs to improve on. You know, and he's actually kind of struggled at times in some of these combines that he's gone to because he doesn't have a very deep bag of tricks in his toolbox when it comes to rushing the passer. You know, he's a one-trick pony, so to speak, right now. He lines up, and basically at the high school level, you know, he's able to just run over and bull rush everybody that he goes up against. But as he's gone to some of these, you know, national-level combines, you know, he's struggled against guys like Lester Cotton and to a certain extent Darrell Williams, offensive lineman from Bessemer City, just because both of them could match his, you know, strength and power. And he didn't really have the counter move to defeat him on a consistent basis. So that's something that can easily be taught, you know, once he gets to Tuscaloosa and Bo Davis has a chance to, you know, teach them how to use his hands better. But, you know, you can't teach the things that he's been given naturally by God, just a tremendously strong and powerful young man. He actually works out at my gym here in Birmingham. And when he walks through the door, I think it's an NFL veteran coming in there to work out during the offseason just based on the eye test.
And I would concur with that. I saw him at the Spain Park Combine. He did have trouble with Lester Cotton and Darrell Williams at times, but he's a very, very good player, and I think he has a chance to – he's so brutally strong, and he did demoralize Drew Kaiser from Opelika, who's a pretty good high school offensive lineman. He just bull-rushed him one time. William said he just needs work on his technique, and once he works on his technique, he's a little bit more focused on a day-to-day basis to play hard every down. There is no doubt that Deron Payne, the sky is the limit. He can play nose. He can even play some end. I think he's extremely attracted to Alabama's defensive scheme, and I think there's no question that he's a heavy Alabama lean at this time, and I would expect him to commit probably sometime during the summer.
You mentioned a name there, Drew, that we need to touch on a little bit. I was a little surprised that Bessemer City guard Darrell Williams decided to come to Alabama's A-Day. We've always heard how he was a lifetime Auburn fan and wears Auburn gear to school and all that. And all of a sudden, even though Alabama's got a bevy of guards, as William pointed out, it appears Alabama is, and I'll start with William on this, it appears Alabama's gotten sort of a little bit more in the picture with Darrell Williams of Bessemer City.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's too talented not to, you know, go down the road a pretty good ways through the evaluation process with. You know, there's two kids in the state that I think in a normal year, if Alabama hadn't loaded up, you know, with two centers and quite a few offensive guards, you know, if you consider Pierce Bacher and you know, some of those other ones, interior players that they signed last year. But, you know, there's a center at Wetumpka named Brandon Kennedy, who I actually think is a better center and guard prospect than Dallas Wormack. You know, he's a guy that I wish Alabama, and I hope Alabama, might have the opportunity to take, you know, if there's a defection or something along the way going towards National Signing Day. But, no, there's no doubt. There's a pretty nice offensive line class right here in the state of Alabama for 2015, and I think both Darrell Williams and Brandon Kennedy are both kids that are undervalued right now, you know, going into the, you know, but then I think what you'll see happen with both of them, when they start going around to the camp circuit this summer, you're going to see both of them, you know, move up in their ratings based on what I've seen out of them on film. Both, but, you know, this Brandon Kennedy is almost too good to be true. He plays tackle in high school, but he's, you know, going to play center probably at the next level. He's a 4.0 student, much like Darren Payne. His body is physically ready to play SEC football right now. He's got great feet. But I'm a lot higher on both Brandon Kennedy and Darrell Williams than a lot of other people are. I think they both have the chance to be very good SEC offensive linemen.
Interesting that when you were describing just now, when you were describing Brandon and the position he plays in high school and the position he projects at in college, it almost sounded like we could have turned the clock back a year and you'd be talking about Josh Casher. And I say that, William, to say this. I didn't even know until I drove to Alex City to cover a playoff game last year that Josh Casher had a little brother who was a pretty good offensive lineman by the name of Darius Whitfield. He was at A-Day with his brother Josh Casher this past Saturday. What do we know about Darius Whitfield as a prospect and then more specifically as an Alabama prospect?
Well, and I think, you know, you just brought up a great point about, you know, because I personally don't fall into the Nick Saban category of thinking that every offensive lineman has to be 6'4", 300 pounds, you know, coming out of high school to be a good SEC offensive lineman, you know. We won two national championships with a center that was 6 foot tall with his cowboy boots on. So, you know, Casher, I really was beside myself when, you know, when they kind of passed on him this time last year. And, you know, whether he wanted to or not, he went ahead and committed to Auburn. But, you know, you could tell that the kid was just dying to come to Alabama. You know, his younger brother's probably not in the same class that Josh was. But has a chance to get there, I think, over a period of time. And I just think, you know, when you say what kind of chances does he have to be an Alabama prospect, probably right now he would be considered a B-list guy in that regard. But, you know, that could certainly change if he comes to camp this summer and blows people's doors off.
And I didn't point out, but he is actually a 16 kid. He's got two
years
to get better.
Correct.
So he's not a guy
correct.
We're looking at for this cycle. I didn't make that clear when I asked William the question, but Whitfield has got two more years of high school ball to improve upon. The night I watched him, I liked what I saw, certainly raw, but like his older brother, he appears to me to be a guy that will get after your butt when that ball is snapped.
No, absolutely. And, you know, he plays down there in an area of the state where there's always a ton of, you know, great high school talent. So, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, the guys down in the Mobile area, you know, they come out of high school, I think, a little bit more college ready than other areas of the state just because of the type of competition that they play on Friday nights.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think Whitfield's got a chance to be a good player in another year and a half's time. I think, you know, Josh is undersized, like William said, much like William Vallejos, but I think he's a player. I think it was very wise for Alabama to get in on him. And now you've got guys like J.C. Hassenauer coming in. Hopefully this will allow Grant Hill to move the guard and be a natural guard, as I think he is, and maybe make a run at Ari Quanjo's job. I do think, you know, Hassenauer and Casher will likely redshirt next year, but you still hope that it sets it up for Grant Hill to move inside the guard eventually, permanently, because I think, again, I watched him for 3-4 years in high school. I think that's where his future lies. I don't think he's a tackle, per se. I think he's done a nice job at center, but Hassenauer is a mean SOB, so is Casher. If those two guys come in and solidify that position, then I think you could see, you know, Grant Hill move to guard, and then Alabama's offensive line will begin to gel. And also with Piers Bacher, Montel McBride, and the talent infused, I think by 2015 and 16, with Mario Cristobal at the level he's recruiting, Alabama's offensive line will be a strength, no question.
Yeah, but the one thing that I'll follow up. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Lee. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the one thing I'll follow up with on what Drew was talking about with both Hassenauer and, you know, Casher coming in the same class, I think Mario Cristobal is probably going to have to make the decision to play one of them this year,
right,
in a backup position, to provide some separation between the two of them in classes, because I think there's probably I think he's probably good enough and athletic enough to play all five positions, but I think they've probably got their eyes set on Richie Pettibone, who's a 2015 commitment. But there's a better-than-average chance center might be his best position. He's a Barrett Jones-type kid. He's a, you know, an athletic offensive lineman. He's probably a little bit more powerful at the point of attack than Barrett was coming out of high school, but he's an extremely intelligent kid. He's been around football his whole life. So I think you might see, you know, either or, not both, but either or, Casher or Hassenauer. I think one of them is probably going to play this year.
Excellent point.
Question for you, William, about Dom Jackson. The things that I'm hearing about him now are exactly the things that I was hearing a year ago about Leon Brown, about a guy that, you know, didn't go through spring, a guy who's going to come in and make an immediate impact. But Leon didn't start a game until the Sugar Bowl. But everybody seems convinced that that Dom Jackson might even start the West Virginia game despite not running with the first offense yet. What about Dom Jackson sets him apart from, say, Leon Brown that makes people think he's going to play so much earlier?
Well, I hope when he gets to campus, I don't see the same thing out of him that I saw out of Leon Brown. And you know, Alabama had a very nice run of bringing in, you know, junior college offensive tackles, even though Leon Brown had shifted inside. You know, Brown's not a guy that, you know, has great hip snap and, you know, gets under people and gets a lot of push at the point of attack. More of a leaner and, you know, I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but that's just not his strength. And, you know, he looked totally lost last spring. And this is why I think sometimes you have to be careful, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, of getting down on a player, you know, too early in the process, especially at the offensive line position, because there's a big difference in going from playing New York State junior college ball to coming down and playing in the SEC. And, you know, the league that Dominic Jackson's playing in out in California is a lot more competitive. You see a lot more guys, you know, move on to the Pac-12, and, you know, some of them come back here to the SEC. But, no, I never saw Leon Brown's film look anything like Dominic Jackson. I mean, he's, you know, right now with Cameron Robinson kind of providing some stability at left tackle, you know, I don't know if Mario Cristobal is going to put Dominic Jackson at left tackle and let him and Cameron Robinson, you know, have a best man win competition there. Do you put him behind Ari Quanjo or Leon Brown? Because this kid's, you know, 6'6". You know, he's got more of a tackle build than he does an offensive guard build. But, you know, if you want to just, you know, for those of you out there that are listening that enjoy offensive line play, I'm not sure if I've seen a more devastating run blocker than I've seen out of Dominic Jackson since 1988 when Tony Mandrich was a senior at Michigan State.
Yeah, that's heavy praise there, and I agree. He's just a devastating run blocker.
We're in our final minute, so I guess we got to wind things down. This is a time show, William, and at 10 o'clock we're going to be shut off whether we're through talking or not. I want to take this chance to thank you for joining us tonight, William. And go ahead and tell our listeners where they can find you and Drew on the Internet.
They can check us out every day at www.alabamaintel.com.
Absolutely. We've got a lot of things going on. We've got the Alabama sweepstakes going on. You can win tickets to a NASCAR race, tickets to the West Virginia opener, autographed memorabilia from Dale Earnhardt Jr., Richard Petty. So just, you know, it's free. Just log on, check out our website. We're growing every day. We're proud of where it's going. And we're going to have an updated story on Christian Bell up in just a few minutes. Now have quotes from that young man. So just check us out at alabamaintel.com.
Well, that's going to be it. We want to thank William Barger and Drew DeArmond of Alabama Intel. I'm Kerry Clark with BamaMag.com. Thanks for Thomas Watts for being our engineer back in the studio. Keep on listening to BamaMag. Welcome back, everybody.